is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And good afternoon. Welcome to One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones here for the next 3 hours. A downpour going on right now in Orchard Park, and practice actually has been shifted indoors to the Ad Pro Sports Training Center. John Murphy and Donald Jones here. I don't know if we can, you know, we've had an interesting summer with weather here, right?
We've had
tornadoes not too far away. We had yesterday's eclipse. That's not exactly weather. And today we got a downpour. I mean, pretty amazing downpour going on. Those of you watching on MSG can see the shot, the stationary camera from inside New Era Field. And, man, look at the rain come down. Pretty amazing. You know, sheets of rain.
And down at St. John's Fisher, we had a couple of times where we were trying not to get electrocuted. So
we
dodged. I think for the most part, though, we had good weather down there. We dodged. We dodged some storms. So, yeah, you know what, Murph? Let's start
Donald?
The show off like this.
Okay, Donald.
Did you by any chance have a chance to see Rex Ryan last night do?
Oh no, was he on last night?
He was on last night.
What, the pregame or?
No, they did the show. They had.
I totally forgot about that.
They had
that.
Gruden and his partner.
Yeah.
I forgot
McDonough.
His name.
Sean McDonough.
Yeah. And then they, like, switched over, and they had Rex and
Beth Mullins.
Beth. Yep. Yeah. They had them, and they did, like, a quarter.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yep. How was Rex?
You could tell he's getting used to it.
Yeah.
You know, it takes some getting used to it for him. But it was weird because – and even Gruden said something about it. He's like, I never thought I'd see the day where Rex Ryan is criticizing the quarterback for the Giants, the backup.
Oh, Geno.
Geno, yeah. And Rex Ryan was criticizing him. He's like, you can't make those bonehead throws. And
Rex?
Yeah, it was
hot
good.
Hot takes from
hot
Rex.
Hot takes, yeah. But it was good.
I missed that. I didn't really check in on that game. And I know you did. Did you watch most of it, all of it?
I watched probably 2.5 quarters of it.
The big take – we're going to talk about the Bills, but the big takeaway from that game, it seems to me, I haven't read about it today, was the injury to Odell Beckham in the second quarter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Odell Beckham sprained his ankle, no serious injury despite an ugly hit. He was diagnosed with an ankle sprain left in the second quarter. He was on the field kind of rolling around in pain after the hit. Even outside the Giants locker room, there was video of him sort of limping and really looking bad. Hit delivered by Browns cornerback Breann "Body" Calhoun after a leaping catch by Odell Beckham. Didn't think there's any doubt he'll be ready. Beckham said this, no doubt he'll be ready for the season opener, 19 days away, September 10th against the Cowboys. But here you have one of the league's premier, if not the premier star in the league, at least in terms of many fans going down with an ankle injury on sort of an unnecessary second quarter hit in a second preseason game. It was scary, I guess, to watch, Donald, right? Is it a bad hit? Is it a cheap shot?
You know, I don't know if it was a cheap shot. You know, it's preseason, and we talked about this all the time. I know it's football, and I know that you're out there playing, you're in the heat of the battle, but at the same time, it's preseason, right? And you're a guy who's, if you're playing on the field with Odell Beckham, you probably have a spot on the field already, like a spot on the roster for the Browns. So, like, come on, keep it in between, you know, the chest plate and, like, keep it in the waist area, the core area, and not go low on a guy. He totally went low on him, you know? So I know it's football. I get that, but that was a low hit on a receiver in the preseason. It's really uncalled for.
Well, and that gets us to today's topic and what we want to launch the show with today, and we're going to talk about the Bills. We got a good guest lineup. We'll fill you in on that. But preseason football, here we are, two games in the books for the Bills, two more to go. The so-called most meaningful preseason game coming up Saturday night when the Bills play at Baltimore at 7 o'clock. But what's the right number of preseason games? What's the sweet spot for preseason football in the NFL? When you see Odell Beckham go down, and you said Brandon Marshall also left the game.
Yeah, Brandon Marshall. Eli lobbed it was like a cover two shot. Eli lobbed it out there. Safety came over top and hit him. So he's getting x-rays on his shoulder today.
I mean, the league, nobody thinks the league can afford to lose superstars with preseason football injuries. But what's the solution? We've been over this over the years. We've been over it on this show over the years. And I have a plan, which I will outline here in a second. All of this, we acknowledge right off the rip, all of this is dependent on owners agreeing to sacrifice some revenue.
Right.
From ticket revenue, from television revenue for preseason football. I mean, that and look, that's the hard part. That's the hard part, right? And I also, in our discussion today, I'd like to separate it from the discussion of, well, maybe you add a 17th regular season game or an 18th regular season game. No, let's put that aside. That's for another day. Mm-hmm. Those, to me, are meaningful CBA discussions. But I think preseason football, you might be able to do this without, you know, interrupting the progress of the collective bargaining agreement, which still has, what, 4 or 5 years left to play. What's the right number of NFL preseason games? That's our Twitter poll today. It's up on Twitter right now. Love to hear your thoughts on it. What is the right number? What's the sweet spot for NFL preseason football games? Right now, 55% of you say 2 is a good number. 21% say 3 is a good number. 13% of you say none. Don't even bother with them. 11% say keep it as is at 4. What do you think? What's the right number of NFL preseason games for the Bills and for 31 other teams because of the injury? You know, you're balancing a couple of things here, the risk of injury. You do want to get reps for playing time and exposure to some of the younger players trying to make your roster. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? What's the right number of preseason games? The lines are open as well. The phone lines, 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. What's the perfect number for NFL preseason games?
I'm in that 2 to 3 range. I'm okay with 3. I like what you said earlier. You can have 3 with at least one of those games just being a rookie and second year type of deal.
Can I outline my plan? I want to hear what you say.
Okay.
Briefly, here's what I think. 2 preseason games and a 3rd game, a rookie game. Rookies, first-year players, you have like a 45-man roster. You can put anybody you want in it, but typically it would be rookies, first-year players, maybe second-year players, guys who need exposure, guys who need the reps, playing against other young guys. So 2 modified preseason games played any way you want, and 1 rookie or preseason game, boom, that's it. You want to scrimmage against a team, go ahead, knock yourself out. I think that would work. I think the owners – look, they would sacrifice 1 modified preseason game for whatever the television rights are and whatever the ticket gate is. They would have a second game that would be kind of a developmental game. I think there'd be revenue for that. I think people would televise that. People would watch that. People would come. I guarantee you, people would come here to New Era Field to watch a rookie game. They came here for a practice session back on August 4th.
Yeah,
I think you could mitigate the loss of revenue. You could definitely mitigate the exposure to injuries. I think you could get meaningful work, especially for the young players trying to win a spot on the roster and also get some tune-up time. That's my plan: 2 preseason games, modified preseason games, and 1 rookie game.
You know, I like your
you
plan.
Like that plan.
So just
you?
So you guys know, that was Murph's plan. Even though I started to
We're
go into
call
his
it
plan.
John Murphy's preseason
yeah.
plan.
And if it changes over to something like that, you need to get some money
credit.
For that
yeah.
or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah, get some credit for that one. Maybe you go in the Hall of Fame. You know, they're putting other people
well,
in that have really contributed to the game.
If I'm available that weekend, I would. I would. But what do you think? I mean, it would work, right?
I like that.
Now
like
somebody
that.
Said, and I don't maybe one of our staffers. One of our interns who usually come up with the good ideas for the show, one of the interns said, well, what about guys like Donald Jones, young Donald Jones 7 years ago, trying to make a roster? Doesn't young Donald Jones need 4 preseason games?
Yeah.
What about it?
You know, I think a young Donald Jones, maybe you can shorten the preseason and expand upon your – we talked about this out on the field, expand upon your practice squad, you know, so that these guys now have more opportunities to show in practice, you know, instead of just getting cut and you only have – however many – how many guys on the practice squad now? 9?
I think there's up to 12 now, isn't
up to 12, okay. So expand upon your practice squad where you're not paying guys $20,000, $25,000 a week. You have guys on the practice squad. They might make $100,000 a year, but you get more time to really develop these guys because you can see in a guy like, man, I like this kid. You know, I really like this kid, but I only get a certain amount of guys on my practice squad, and I can't keep everybody, you know, that I like. And so mm-hmm. – you end up having to cut a certain guy that you might want to keep around. So I would like to see those guys. I like your plan. I think you can expand upon the practice squad, and that gives guys a full year to really develop.
I think that rookie game would be fun.
It would be fun, and people would definitely come to watch it. People want to see the rookies play.
I bet there'd be at least 20,000, 25,000 people here.
Yeah.
Maybe not paying the full ticket price that you would for a game, but at least 20,000 to 25,000 people. You know,
people would come to see
to
that.
See the rookies,
yeah.
See the draft picks, see the undrafted, see the guys who were drafted a year ago that, you know, maybe are still fighting. I mean, I can sit down with a pencil and make up a roster now of rookies and first and maybe some second-year players, get 45 guys.
I'm telling you, people would definitely come to watch that.
Well,
you know, it's so hard because the guys who – you have that rookie minicamp, and then you end up cutting most of those guys, you know. Mm-hmm. But now at least those guys would get a better opportunity to – to make your roster and show and prove instead of just one weekend. I mean, it's hard to show in one weekend that this kid is good enough to make our roster.
Yeah, in a couple of series of playmakers.
Yeah.
90 players on the Bills roster right now. By September 2nd, a week from Saturday, right? Yeah, a week from Saturday, they got to knock 37 names off the roster.
Whew.
So those 37 players, there's the bulk of your players for the so-called rookie game right there. And obviously some veterans, but you could easily, I think, find 40 players, 45 players, young players, rookies first, maybe some second years. I don't want any retread veterans, you know. I don't want anybody in
No. No,
you could easily, I think, find 40 to 45 players to play in a rookie game. I think it would have some marketability to fans on television and live viewing, would preserve the vets. And because the way it is now, Donald, that first preseason game, it's tough to watch.
Yeah.
And there's you know, a million different guys who they want to get looks at, like young Donald Jones, and they want to see them play. And then the fourth preseason game, we know it's coming. I'm trying to look at it like the eclipse now because I don't really want to see preseason game number four because you know it's coming. It's going
to
be.
You know you have to travel to Detroit.
Yeah. No, it's here, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is here. It is here. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what's coming, and it'll be tough to watch. And it'll be guys who, bless their hearts, are trying as hard as they can to make the roster. And, you know, coaches who are trying as hard as they can not to get anybody injured, still to make evaluations, it's tough to watch. So replace that game. Put a rookie game in and eliminate one preseason game.
You know, then you would end up having some coaches like, I have a first-round rookie I want to play. I don't know if I want to play him in this game and expose him to injury. You know, like a Tre'Davious White. I don't know if we really want to play this first-rounder because we're going to need him this year. You know, so maybe you put some stipulations to make sure that your rookies play because they need reps. They need live game action reps, especially if they're going to play on Sundays for you once the season starts. They need the reps, and I understand you don't want those guys to get hurt, but I would think you would have some coaches try to hold back their first-round and second-round rookies from that game.
What's the right number of preseason games? That's our Twitter poll. We will talk to you about it on the telephone at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. A couple of tweets. Bills Monster tweets in, keep it at four. I like seeing the young guys get a chance. Plus, it gets the fans and refs time to warm up. Except I like seeing the young guys get a chance, too. To me, that's the best part of preseason, but I don't think, you know, they get so many limited reps. I mean, in the four preseason game structure we have now, young guys, you know, are lucky if they get on the field for a couple of series at the end of the game. I'd rather see them get meaningful time, rookies versus rookies. Our buddy Jose Abark in Rochester tweets, and only thought against an odd number of games is the fact that some teams will get one home game and others two. All right, I get that. Here's the solution, though. For the rookie game, say it's an ongoing series, Bills versus Cleveland, and 1 year they play that game in Cleveland, and one year they play it in Orchard Park, or, you know, Bills in Pittsburgh, or whoever, Bills and Giants, Jets. You could fix that, I think, for the one rookie game, and then play one at home, one preseason game at home, and one away.
You know, the thing is, with a game like that, you now, these guys really get a chance to get all of the reps. Like, you look at the first game, we were talking about Zay Jones, and it was like, man, Zay Jones only played eight, nine snaps in that first game. But that's because you had so many wide receivers that you're trying to get some work to see if they can make your roster. You know he's going to be on your roster. Then in the second preseason game, it's like, we got to get some action from Zay Jones. And all of a sudden, you know, Sammy's out of here. And then, Anquan was after the game. But still, it was like, we need to get some action out of Zay Jones so that he's ready to go week one because you know he's going to be in the lineup. So you have a game like this where now you have guys that you want to see first and second year guys really get some work. You'll see them really get the work in a game like that.
All right, what do you think? What's the right number? What's the sweet spot for preseason football? How many games? How would you structure it? Give us a call, 803-0550, the number toll-free, 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. On the show today, we got a pretty good lineup coming up. We're finally going to get a chance to talk to Jordan Matthews, acquired in that trade, a week or so ago, now 8-9 days ago with the Buffalo Bills. Jordan Matthews, Bills wide receiver, is going to join us after practice wraps up. Steve Tasker is about 15 minutes away. We'll keep the Bills former special teams ace in studio for about an hour and get his thoughts on preseason football and a couple of other items. And we'll also have a reaction after practice today as to what's going on with the Buffalo Bills. Practice probably wrapping up in the next 30 minutes or so. An interesting practice because they started outside at 10:45 and then I think we're forced to move indoors on the other side of the wall over there to the AdPro Sports Training Center because of the rain. Not practicing today. Oh, almost lost my notes here. Jonathan Williams, Bills running back. He is day-to-day now with a knee injury suffered in practice on Sunday. Ramon Humber, starting linebacker, limited today with an oblique muscle strain. Marcel Darius limited today with a quad muscle strain. Cordy Glenn progressing, according to head coach Sean McDermott, moving forward. Glenn and Jordan Matthews' limited work. Matthews, of course, has the chip bone. Rod Streeter, week to week, they're evaluating his options. Head coach Sean McDermott met with the media before practice today. Obviously, the topic of discussion was the Anquan Boldin announcement, which came down a couple of days ago now, Anquan Boldin announcing his retirement. And Sean McDermott was asked how his team handled it, getting the word that Anquan Boldin had decided to step away.
I think the bottom line with this, with Anquan's situation as a football team, is A, we respect his decision. That said, we adjust. That's what we do. That's what this league is about, adjusting on the field and adjusting off the field with our game plans. And so, you know, in this league, been in this league and around this league for around 20 years, I've learned not to be surprised by anything. And, you know, that's really the core of it. And as a football team, we adapt. You know, these players, this football team is has adapted before and will continue to adapt and show grit. That's a hallmark of a good football team. So I've been extremely proud of the way everyone has done that all through preseason.
How the challenge, though, of trying to regroup that receiver room, knowing it's gone through a number of shuffles already, and even the offense as a whole, just the challenges of doing that and keeping that focus, knowing that, you know, Sammy's gone and, you know, you have all these moving parts.
Right. No, I mean, the guys, they understand that. These are professional athletes. They understand that. I like the room. I still like the room. I said that before, and I'll say it again. I like the room. The guys in the room know that there's an opportunity for another guy to step up, and that's, again, what happens in this league. NFL is a league of opportunity, in this case, for a player to step up and show us what he can do. I really liked what I saw the other night from Brandon Riley and Dakeel Shorts, and they continue as young players to show the ability to catch the football in traffic. So, hey, you know, this is we're looking at this as an opportunity, and I'm sure those guys are as well.
Sean McDermott speaking to the media today. We talked a lot yesterday about who benefits from Boldin being gone in that receivers room. Coach McDermott mentioned those names, Dakeel Shorts and Brandon Riley.
And Brandon Riley. Those guys definitely are the ones that can truly benefit from something like this. I mean, here's the thing. You have guys like Philly Brown, like guys like Dez Lewis, those guys that if they're on your roster, they're going to make more money than a Dakeel Shorts or a Brandon Riley, right? So if you have those two guys that can do what Philly Brown and Dez Lewis can do, then it's like, well, you might as well keep the younger guys, you know, because they're cheaper. I mean, that's just the business model, and that's how it works in this league. And so those guys, if they continue to make plays, and I'm sure in this upcoming game, we're going to see them against some twos. You know, they want to see can you now make this happen against better competition? And if they can, then, you know, maybe they have an opportunity to make this 53 the active roster or an opportunity to be on this practice squad.
We talked a lot yesterday on the Boldin issue, Donald, about, you know, the leadership void, the leadership vacuum that his departure creates. And he's only here a couple of weeks. It remains to be seen how much they feel that. But Coach McDermott was asked about that today. And he was asked if he detected any sense of his players feeling abandoned by Anquan Boldin's decision to leave. Here's what Sean McDermott said about that.
It all starts with the word respect. We respect Anquan's decision. We respect our opponents. We respect the process. I mean, that's a healthy word, right, for a lot of parts of life. And this is a part of life that Anquan has decided to go on and be done with his playing career. So, you know, that's all part of becoming and transforming the young men on our football team, that this is a part of life, and we move forward, and you do it with positive energy and an outlook for finding the next opportunity.
As much as this is an opportunity for a lot of young guys to move up, what do you lose in, because you're counting on Anquan to be a leader and be a mentor to some of these guys, how big of a setback is that, knowing that you'll lose 14 years of veteran experience and a mentor in that locker room?
Well, I've got a lot of experienced guys. We've got a lot of experienced guys on this football team. In that room is Jordan Matthews. In that room is Andre Holmes. We've got some young players in that room. Yes, we've got some young players on this football team. Absolutely. That said, we feel enough leadership on this football team from the players I mentioned earlier and some others. We're developing. It's one thing to have leaders on the primary level of the football team. It's another thing to develop leaders underneath of those primary leaders. And that's what we as football coaches, as teachers, as developers of men, that's what we're here to do.
Sean McDermott, and again, an issue we discussed at length yesterday, the leadership void.
Right.
What have they lost? I mean, and a couple of things to consider. Anquan Boldin was only here 13 days. Mm-hmm. It's not as if Kyle Williams walked out the door or, you know, a guy who's been around here
exactly.
for a while. But I think it. I don't know how to gauge that. I don't know how even how to measure that, but it's something to keep an eye on.
Can
right?
we look on it? Can we look at it from the flip side of this thing? And I know fans, a lot of fans, all they want to hear about is wins and losses and if the team is going to win games and end the 17-year drought. But let's look at this from the flip side of this thing. And a lot of what Coach McDermott talks about since he's gotten in the door has been about leadership, has been about high-character guys, and everything being a productive citizen in the world, not just a football player. It's always going to be bigger than football. For young guys, and I know my take on it, but I want to get yours, Murph, could this possibly be a positive for these young guys, not just on the field, but when you have a young Dakeel Shorts or a young Donald Jones, let's just say, when I was coming in as a rookie, to see a guy like Anquan Boldin come in here, you know he's former man of the year. You know all of the stuff that he's done in the communities that he's been in and where he's from and all of that stuff. To come in and say, you know what? This is it's bigger than me. You know, there's so much going on out here. Maybe I need to, you know what, walk away from a few million dollars and go out there and help out in the community. Could that possibly be a good thing for these young guys to understand, look, I understand what I do as a football player, but I need to also get out in the community and help out as well.
That's a very interesting point. I think a lot of it goes back to Coach McDermott's, you know, it's almost like a buzzword with him now, respect.
Respect right.
what Anquan Boldin did. But I think it's an interesting point, and it makes me think maybe those young players that you referred to are looking for cues from management, from mm-hmm. McDermott, from
right.
the other coaches, from the personnel department. Like, how are they reacting to this? Are they, you know, bad-mouthing Anquan
exactly.
Boldin? He left us in the lurch. Or are they actually following through with the public comments of respect? He's a man. We respect what he did.
You respect what he did.
I think they're probably taking their cues from what they see. Or even the older veterans, you know. If you've
right.
got older veterans walking around saying, how could Anquan Boldin do that? But right. instead, if they're saying, well, you know, guy's got to do what he's got to do.
He's got to do what he's got to do. And young players, look at that stuff. They want to see how the franchise, the organization, stands behind his players, you know. And even if a guy decides that he wants to leave, are you going to badmouth me when I decide that I want,
right.
you know, if something like that happened, are you going to badmouth me if I decide that I want to take a knee or something like that during an anthem? Guys look at all of this stuff. Football players have emotion, you know, and they look at everything that comes with not just on the field but how the organization, how the community handles different things.
Talk more about that, Boldin. We can also talk about your proposal for preseason. How many games is enough? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. We'll start with David in Buffalo. David, give us your plan for preseason. What do you think?
Okay. Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I grew up in the era. I'm old enough where I remember 6 preseason games.
Yeah,
wow.
Which was, you know, a nightmare. But anyway, so, all right, the owners don't want to lose the revenue. We get that, and the players don't want an 18 game season. We get that. You know, durability, all of that. You know, so how about we get rid of 2 of the preseason games? Just 1 home, 1 away. All right. And then we go to a 17-game season, and just so kind of like how you have to play on Thursday. Everyone's got to play on Thursday night or Monday night or Sunday night, every team in the league. You have 1 neutral site game. Like, picture the Atlanta Falcons playing the Dallas Cowboys in Tuscaloosa.
Hmm.
Like seriously. Like, I mean, the Bills played in Toronto. I mean, we have games in London, you know, Mexico City. So everybody gets 1 neutral site game. So you have 8 home games, you have 8 away games, you have 1 neutral site game, and the neutral site game is always going to be on prime time.
David, why do we need to add why can't we just fix preseason without adding a regular season game or 2? Is that just to make the owners whole, to keep their revenue up?
Because the owners will make more money, and then therefore the players make more money because they get a percentage of the pie. So I mean. Are you kidding me? If you have a game in Tuscaloosa between the Atlanta Falcons and the Dallas Cowboys, that place is going to be jam-packed.
It depends on how many Alabama players are in the lineups, right? I mean, if what I know about Alabama, there'd be – well, how many Tide players are we going to go see here?
The owners will make more money, and therefore the players will make more money, and the players aren't playing the 18-game season. They're playing the 17-game season, but they're playing 2 less preseason games. So that all equals out. That's perfect.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
I mean, in terms of the money side of your argument, you know, I'd say this from a player standpoint. It's like, shoot, if I can get a $30,000 or some of these guys are getting $250,000 game checks. If I can get that instead of getting a $1,500 game check for a preseason game, I'd rather take that than, you know, I'd rather do a regular season game than a preseason game.
Here's Ryan in Rochester. Ryan, your thoughts on preseason and how to make it better. What do you think?
Hey, guys. I like your three idea. I've always liked the three idea. I like the rookie game idea. Definitely something I would, you know, tune in to see. You know, you got the veterans on the sidelines, you know, and just, you know, they're just the jersey and stuff like that. Obviously not playing. Just out there, you know, leaning over, giving advice, doing stuff like that. And I think it could be a big marketing thing. Come out, come watch our – but maybe it's, you know, maybe it's the first one. Maybe not necessarily the third one. I don't know. They would owners and stuff like that would probably, you know, fight over that as silly as that would be. But you're right. The fourth preseason game, it's pointless. I'd rather watch sitcom reruns I've watched 100 times than watch a fourth game. It's pointless.
Yeah, I hear you. Ryan, how about this? If you want to dress up that rookie game, the thought just occurred to me, Ryan. Thanks for your call. How about if you have the veterans in uniform and they go through their warm-ups and individual drills, and maybe the veteran quarterbacks do the garbage can drill or something. You just have a little fun. And then you play essentially a rookie scrimmage. Time it out if you need. Make, you know, short as you want, long as you want, but play a rookie scrimmage and have all the vets there in uniform going through kind of a warm-up to practice. What about that? I think that would sell tickets. I think that people would be into
it. I think that game will definitely sell tickets. People see, the thirst in this country for football is just – It's too big, you know, for it not to sell tickets. People are going to – people still go to the fourth preseason game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, people, they love football. They just want to see games. They want to take their kids to a game. I mean, it just is what it is in this country. That's how it is. I think people will just – they're always going to go to games, and that's what it's going to be. But I'd rather see three preseason games. I like the rookie game. I just like that concept a lot better.
We'll talk about this throughout the course of the afternoon. Steve Tasker standing by to join us in a minute or two. Of course, we'll take more of your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What's the right number of preseason games? What would work for you? Give us a call and let us know what you think. We awoke this morning to sad news about the death of Joe Kelly, the father of Bills Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly, passed away. Kelly, in a post on Instagram, Jim Kelly said, "Words cannot describe how much I love my father and how brokenhearted our entire family is right now." Jim Kelly said he was an awesome example and taught me and my five brothers how to live life and represent the Kelly family. The cause of Joe Kelly's death not been released as of last night. Last week in an Instagram post, Jim Kelly said his dad was in hospice care in Dunedin, Florida, with his sons taking turns at his side. I met Joe Kelly, knew Joe Kelly, always a delight to be with. Very funny guy, very enamored of his son, all of his sons. You could tell he was very proud of all of his six sons, and just a great patriarch of a really important family in Buffalo football history. So we pass along our condolences to the family of Jim Kelly and his brothers for the passing of his father, Joe Kelly. We're coming up with more after this.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones here for the next hour. We're joined by Bills Wall of Famer and from the NFL on CBS, Steve Tasker is with us. Steve, good to see you.
Thanks for having me back, guys. Nice to be here.
I ended last segment with a little discussion about Joe Kelly, Jim Kelly's dad who passed away.
Yeah.
I knew him a little bit. You knew him quite well, didn't you, over all these many years?
Well, all the guys in the locker room, he was part of the locker room crew, and I've known him for 30 years.
Yeah.
Knew him before his wife, you know, Mrs. Kelly passed away. He was a great dude. Joe was great. Loved him. And his brother Ed was another part of the gang. And of course, there, you know,
Uncle
see
Ed,
the
right, yeah.
people watching the TVs, or you know, you see all six boys. And yeah, Joe hung was just a sweetheart of a guy. And I'll never, you know, there's you asked for a story. I said I don't really have any. I do have one. Remember the Elio DiPaolo wrestling in the odd.
Yeah,
the
last night at the odd.
Last night at the odd, where they had the big Elio DiPaolo all-star wrestling.
Yeah, all the wrestlers
and the Beastie
came
Boys
back.
Came,
yeah.
The yeah. Nasty Boys came in. Yeah. And so there was a big thing.
Jim wound up in the ring, right?
Right. So Jim wound up in the ring because one of the guys, started in on Jim, calling him, you're a loser.
you know, he lost four straight. You're nothing but a loser, and Buffalo's a city of losers. Joe didn't know it was all, you know, rehearsed. Joe was going, he was going in. You know, when they start calling Jim, you know, these names and start, Joe was going after him. I mean, he was going to climb in the and it was funny because, you know, the six brothers, three of them were going, yeah, Joe, go get him. Yeah. Don't let him talk to you. And the other three were like, you can't
stop. Yeah, like, relax.
Calm down.
And he's probably looking at him like, what is your problem?
He was going to go after the guy for calling Jim a loser and saying Buffalo's a city loser. Oh, my gosh. It was because he wasn't in on it, right?
Yeah.
Wow. I will never forget that.
I was telling Donald.
He was old then.
Yeah, he was. I told Donald this story.
I loved him, man. You can't help but love a guy like that.
Five, maybe 10 years ago, I was pumping gas in the Village Orchard Park, and Joe Kelly pulls up next to me, and he had a pickup truck with a trailer attached to it with all kinds of stuff. And it was fall. It was like the weekend before deer season began, just filled with stuff. And I said, Mr. Kelly, what's going on? We kind of knew each other. And he had the biggest smile on his face. And he said, I'm going to Jim's place out in Ellicottville for the weekend. And I thought to myself, there's nothing that guy likes better than hanging with his sons for a weekend like that. Hunting and just sitting around, probably tipping a few beers.
Yeah, those guys, he was in his glory when the boys were around. Yeah. And considering the life Jim had, you know, in football here in Buffalo and the swath he cut through life and how he, you know, embraced everybody, you know, still Jim embraces everybody around him. Joe was part of that, and I think he was really proud of it, and he loved his boys being a part of it, and what a joyous time for him and his whole family, and he really reveled in it.
Did they live here?
For a time, they were here, and they were still in East Brady when Jim was here, first got here, and then, you know, over time, they were here, they stayed here with Jim, and they left, and his mom and dad, and Jim had a huge place here in Orchard Park. They lived there would stay there for extended periods and stuff. But they always had their house in East Brady.
Well, he'll be missed. And, again, we send our condolences along to your former teammate, Jim Kelly, and his family for the passing of Joe Kelly. Switching gears now. Steve Tasker is with us. Bill's Wall of Famer, the great Wall of Fame special teamer, and, of course, from the NFL on CBS. I slipped with the tongue. You get it. Your antenna go up when somebody says Hall of Famer.
Right.
I know.
Right.
I know.
One day, Steve. It's going to happen one day.
Yeah,
it's going to happen one day.
Hey,
you guys are killing me.
Let me get you in on our Twitter poll and this general discussion about preseason football. And you call for preseason games for the Bills. You know what the deal is. You've played, obviously, in the league and played in preseason football games. We're trying to find the sweet spot for NFL preseason. How many games are necessary? Our Twitter poll, we offer a couple of choices. Maybe people think you don't need any preseason games. Maybe you need just a couple, three. Maybe you should keep it at four.
Yeah.
What do you think? Not just number of games, but is there a different structure that might be a little more beneficial than what's going on right now?
Yeah, I think two is the way to go, and I think you need to have an 18-game regular season. I told you this. My plan is, and mine is to go two regular season. And I like your idea about having a rookie game. One of those two preseason games could be a rookie game. It's a great idea. If you're in less one or first or second year or maybe in your third training camp, you're allowed to play in that rookie game and go with it. And then have one game where the veterans – probably the first game is where the veterans are going to come in and jump back into it and play, you know, a lion's share of the first game.
Yeah.
And then have the rookies play in that second game. It'll give them a chance to evaluate and get a look at them and then give them another week to make cuts and then jump off to an 18-game schedule. And I think
– why do you have to pair two more regular season games with fewer preseason?
Well, I think you have to incentivize it for both sides, the players' union and the owners. You got to make it worth it for both of them. I think the 18-game schedule adds over 10% of product that the owners can sell to the networks, which raises the salary cap, which goes back to the players. I think as a 16, and here's my, and I've told you this before, I think you should let them play 18 regular season games, but every guy on the active roster only gets to play in 16 of them. So it's no more dangerous than it would be now. In fact, it's better because you get weeks off inside of the season, and you can raise the roster by I think it's six guys. You give them six guys, and you'll have the same amount of guys every week to week to play when you have to sit guys down and stuff. And Murph is all about. Murph doesn't want to watch football unless his favorite player's playing.
Well, I'm not alone. Hey, the Patriots are coming to town, but it's Jimmy Garoppolo, not Tom Brady. Or, hey, the Patriots are on Monday Night Football this week, but you won't see Tom Brady. How are you going to sell that? Who are you going to convince that that's the product? Tom Brady's on your roster.
Who do you have to
He's
convince?
Not my favorite
who
player.
Who do you have
but,
to convince?
Viewers? Ticket buyers?
There's going to be more people watching that because Tom Brady's not playing than there are who will.
No way.
Because they want to see the other team win.
Maybe
they want to see
stars.
That team. They want to
Why
see.
Why do you think Brady and the Cowboys are on?
You're talking about 1/32nd of the fan base who wants to see Tom Brady.
Right.
Who's really depending on it. In fact, every other of the 31 base, fan bases want to see that team tumble without him. They want to see their team or somebody else have a shot at that. They don't, you know, they want to see the Dallas Cowboys go without, you know, Dak Prescott. They want to see it. So I don't think you lose anything of it. And I get it. I mean, you all have this romanticized feeling like there's this little boy who saves his nickels for months, and he's going to go see his favorite team because his favorite guy and his dream has always been to see Tom Brady play. So he saves up all his nickels for three years to go to this game, and he's not playing. Wow, what a crusher. You know?
Cold.
Come on, man.
Cold.
Give
right?
me a break.
Hey,
that
but I think it does.
Happen.
I think
that
it does.
That does not happen.
Something like Steve's plan would make – it would put more pressure on the teams to find – a better backup quarterback. You know,
it adds
find
a level of difficulty.
You can't more
just,
depth. At
well, then, yeah, but
team.
Then too, those two games that he's out are worth less because you still have 16 other games, or he's going to be able to be a difference. And plus, here's the thing: most of the time, now there are a handful of guys, and they're great guys. And you can name them: it's Eli, Tom Brady, mm-hmm. who else? Maybe nobody. Drew Brees. Maybe a
Aaron
couple,
Rodgers.
A handful of guys that couldn't use a week off because they got a bum ankle, mm-hmm. and it would help them not to have to come back. It'd make them better when they got back. They can take a week off. They don't have to fight through a broken finger for
what
the
if
first
you,
week.
What if you're the Buffalo Bills? You're scrambling for a playoff spot. It's mid to late December. You need wins, and, oh, no, Tyrod Taylor's already played 16 games. We got to sit him out for this game. I mean, what are you doing to yourself? What are you talking about?
That's a lack of planning.
I guess. We didn't know we were going
to
play.
You know it's coming. You know it's coming.
Leave it up to the teams to figure out when they want players to play and when they want them to take their week off.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the thing that would be the negotiating process between the player – I think the players' union would go for it, mm-hmm. and I think the owners would go for it because, hey, the network's got to pay for those two games. Yeah. And that's better than two preseason
networks
games.
Networks might not want to pay for games if the stars aren't there.
How do they know which ones those are going to be? And I'll tell you this.
Surprise.
You talk about the fantasy. It's an industry. The fantasy football industry is a huge industry, and that throws a huge curveball and a level of difficulty that would add something to those leagues, where you've got to keep an eye. You know, drafting Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or Matt Ryan or these guys. Hey, it's not a rubber stamp championship, so it adds something in that direct respect. But I think the big negotiating point for this would be this. What would a player's off time look like? Would he get a vacation?
Yeah, it looked like Odell and those guys a couple of years ago.
Would he look like
Odell? Last year on a boat?
Yeah,
that's exactly right. Does he get to leave the country for a week and go to Bahamas or go to Hawaii, or go wherever, go to Europe? Does he have to be out of the building for that week that he's off or those 2 weeks that he's off? Or does he, now he's got a bum ankle, he's got to come in and get ice. That's a negotiating issue that's going to have to be ironed out. But I think, listen, that you don't know. Every year you go through, we have this same conversation. The preseason stinks.
I've been putting it off until today.
Right.
I finally
now put yourself in coach's shoes and on the preseason and trying to evaluate first and second year guys. Do you now force teams, let's say you go down to two preseason games, do you force teams to have those inner squad scrimmages throughout the week so that you can you can get an accurate evaluation against opposite
In my opinion, the guys we're talking about in that rookie game, anybody that's going into their third training camp mm-hmm. or less, listen, you got to give them to the organization for as long, a couple of months. From the draft all the way through April, from the end of April, go through May and June, and give those guys 2 months of preparation. Get them on the field. Let the coaches work with them. Take the, come on. These guys would, most of them would cut their finger off to make the roster. They don't care about working an extra 8 weeks when they're trying to make their dream. Now, some of these other guys that have been playing for 12 years, you know what? I do want to go to the south of France for about 2 months. I'm going. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in here trying to make the squad. So I think there should be a line of demarcation for these young players. You talk about a developmental league. Come on, man. Just let the teams develop them in the offseason. Give them March and April for the guys that are on the roster, and give them April and May for the guys that they draft with the guys that are trying to make the roster. Give these, you know, these coaches are in, they're in there working anyway. Mm-hmm. Give these young players to these organizations and let them work together and try to get these guys ready to play. And then if they can't make it, you know, then it's easier for them to say, you know what, it's time for me to do something else. And that, you know, two preseason games turns into an okay thing then.
Steve Tasker is with us, joining Donald and I. We've got a lot more coming up, including Steve's thoughts on Anquan Boldin's decision when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with more John Murphy with Donald Jones and Steve Tasker in studio with us, from the NFL on CBS, the former Bills special teamer. So we talked a lot about the structure of preseason. We will get back to that. We got Jordan Matthews coming by after practice probably in the next 15, 20 minutes or so. But, of course, the big news came out Sunday evening, Steve, with Anquan Boldin deciding that he was done. Pulled the plug. Were you shocked? And what did you think?
I was a little bit, particularly after he went through the soul-searching aspect. We reportedly, we went back and really had to decide whether he wanted to play a 15th year, decided he was going to do it. The Bills knew that they were probably not getting a number one guy. They were getting, you know, maybe a role player, but you know, that's the kind of guy he is at this point of his career. What they got, really, what they wanted was a mentor, a guy who knew how to win, who has won a Super Bowl, who has a skill set that that is as important in the meeting rooms and in the locker room and person to person as it was in production on the field, the kind of human being. And you can tell that the reason that he left was, the divisiveness that's happening in our country at this point. So he, you know, he's a thoughtful and well put together guy between his ears. And that's kind of what the Bills wanted him to transfer on to his teammates. He was going to be an important personality in the locker room, more so, I think, than the production on the field. And, you know, I mean, when it came over him that he wasn't going to be able to dredge it up, you know, and play with the passion that he had. And yeah. He said, you know what, he couldn't do it. And you know what, good for him. For the Bills, I'm sure it's a punch in the stomach, no question. But they would have loved to have him say, gosh, I wish we'd, you know, wish he wouldn't have taken us down this road.
You would love to have him out there. Steve, you played the game, so you know what it's like when you're at the end of your career and you're trying to figure out if you want to keep going or not. And you know a lot of guys who go through this stuff, you know, a lot of athletes, football players, whatever sport that they play, it's like, do I want to give it one more year or not? In your opinion, what comes over these guys? Because if he reportedly had to go through this soul searching and then he ends up signing the deal, and then you get here and it's like, I don't know. You go through 2 weeks, and it's like, I don't know if I got it in me to do this.
Yeah, exactly. He might have said, for me, I had some pretty good years on the field, and for me, it got to the point where I just, I could get ready to play on Sunday. I could, dredge up the emotion, people have seen it. You walk down the tunnel at Ralph Wilson, it's pretty hard not to be pretty fired up. You know, it's a great – but – and I think Anquan knew this. The hard part is getting playing and training hard enough and well enough and practicing hard enough and well enough Monday through Saturday to get yourself ready to play well.
Right.
I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't train hard enough because of all the nicks and bruises and the physical baggage that you carry around after 13 years. I couldn't get it together to play well.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have gone out in there and just rent, but I was, I was not the guy. I was getting pushed around at the end, and I knew it was time.
How big of a loss is it in terms of the receiving core, and who benefits, do you think? Who will
You can look at the roster, and that's who's going to do it. I'd like to see it's a shame about Rod Streeter's injured with his toe and stuff. He would have really been the guy. I would have said that, you know, that guy's got a chance. Now, Andre Holmes could be the next guy to step up and say, okay, he's going to be there. But make no mistake, the guys in that room know this. If you aren't playing well, you're going to be replaced. If they're trading Sammy Watkins, mm-hmm. and Jordan Matthews are going to come in and talk to us in a little bit. Jordan Matthews is here. They're trading guys out and signing and cutting guys. Guys are retiring. Nobody is safe in that room. And if you're going to stick around as a wide receiver of the Bills, you better produce. And that's, I think, the clear message. Nobody is safe on the roster. They are looking to upgrade, and they will. So whatever opportunity it is, you better make the most of it.
You know, I said this, and going back to Anquan, I said this to Murph yesterday, and I've been saying it for a while because we've talked about Roethlisberger and how he keeps on talking about retiring. And I feel like this sport, football, in any sport, but especially football, if you're talking and you're thinking about retirement, and I don't know if I got it in me, I feel like you're done. You know, I feel like you're done already. Mentally, you're just done. Now, Roethlisberger, he's a quarterback. He might not have to train as hard as the rest of the guys to get through seasons. But I feel like if you're thinking about it, you're done. I remember talking to Stevie Johnson the year – so he played last year, but he got hurt. Going into last year, I remember talking to him, and he asked me – we're out in San Diego, and he's like, hey, man, what's retired life like? And I'm like, why are you asking me that? You know?
Yeah,
and he's like, are you thinking about it, or is that why you're asking me that? And he was like, man, you know, I want to spend more time with my kids now, you know? And so he was done at that point, and which is why now he's
done. Now, you can – if you – and really the reason you start asking about that is because you start getting tired, right?
Yeah.
You get started – it is hard to bring it every day and run hard and get banged around, even in practice where they're not tackling and all of that stuff. I mean, it's a physical pounding when you practice. I mean, this – you know. This ain't like golf where you go out and just hit balls on the range and you loosen up a little bit. I mean, you got to go out and compete.
Yeah.
And that gets exhausting pretty quick. But I think what happens is, and guys believe this, right or wrong, I'm going to go. And if we start winning, I know then I'm going to be, you know, that'll pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we start winning games and I'm on a good team and I've got a chance to contend, that's easier for me to flip a switch or at least invest myself day after day into this process of getting ready to play. Maybe, you know, and there's no question that Anquan knew the kind of situation he was landing in 2 weeks ago when he signed here, so none of that's changed. And I just don't think anything inspired him. You know, I think he was looking for something to inspire him to get him back to the place where he felt like he could play, and it just wasn't happening.
Talk more about Anquan Boldin's decision. We'll talk about the receiving room. Jordan Matthews is going to join us in the next hour. Steve Tasker sticks around. Come on back. We'll get you on the air as well on your on the telephone line at 803-0550 and toll-free outside Buffalo 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills has just wrapped up their Tuesday practice, getting set for the preseason game coming up Saturday night in Baltimore, preseason game number 3. Running back Jonathan Williams sat out today, day-to-day with a knee injury, an injury suffered in practice on Sunday, according to head coach Sean McDermott. Linebacker Ramon Humbert limited today with an oblique muscle strain. Defensive lineman Marcel Darius limited today with a quad muscle strain. He says they're making progress with Cordy Glenn progressing, moving forward. Glenn got in limited work in walkthrough today, as did wide receiver Jordan Matthews, who we expect will be a guest on the show here momentarily. Still week-to-week with Rod Streeter evaluating his options. The Bills and the Baltimore Ravens coming up Saturday night, 7 o'clock at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. The father of Bills Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly, Joe Kelly, passed away. It happened last night. The cause of death not released, but Jim Kelly said last week that Mr. Kelly was in hospice care in Dunedin, Florida. Joe Kelly, Jim Kelly's dad, passed away last night. Giants receiver Odell Beckham Jr. appears to have escaped serious injury, an injury that happened last night in a 10-6 preseason loss in Cleveland. Beckham has been diagnosed with an ankle sprain, left the game in the second quarter after a low hit delivered by Browns quarterback Brian Boddy Calhoun. as Beckham made a leaping catch. Beckham says he doesn't think there'll be any doubt he'll be ready for the season opener in 19 days against the Dallas Cowboys. Before that game, a dozen Browns players took a knee in prayer during the national anthem before the game against the Giants. The group knelt behind the bench. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. Browns coach Hugh Jackson says he expects to have a decision on his starting quarterback by tomorrow. Brock Osweiler got the start for the second straight week last night. The Jets expect to name their starting quarterback next Monday. It is expected that Josh McCown will be the man. Neither Christian Hackenberg nor Bryce Petty has challenged for the job quite yet. And Trevor Siemian was named the starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos late yesterday. Coach Vance Joseph saying Siemian was the clear-cut winner. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Steve Tasker in studio with us, the Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS. He will call. He'll be part of the call of the game on Saturday night, the Bills and the Baltimore Ravens, along with Andrew Catalan and Mike Catalano. What did you think of the preseason game last Thursday, the game in Philadelphia, Steve? Tough one, huh, all those penalties?
Yeah, it was. The penalties were, you know, for a – you know, Sean McDermott said something to the team, you got to play better, you got to play – and man, oh, man, it was a barrage. It was worse than the first game.
Yeah.
That's concerning, I think. It's hard, and I've other teams have done it, and other teams have done it in the regular season. And you talk to the coaches, and we'll go into production meetings, you know, going to cover the team, and they're getting penalized all the time. And you say, what are you going to do? What do you do? And the first step is, you know, they bring in officials to the, you know, to the practice and let them – officiate the game.
And they've been here the last two practices.
Right, and then
– yeah, some today.
And then you look at it, too, and you can look at it some, and some, you know, the viewers are watching some of the things that happened. Some of the calls I thought they got called against them were horrible.
Yeah.
They were horrible.
We talked about
so you can – but nevertheless, there was like what, 16 flags or something like that?
15 on the Bills?
Enforced 15 penalties. Enforced penalties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a couple, three or four, that were not accepted. So you can say, what are they – okay, so they got like a, what, four or five bad calls?
Yeah.
Well, that's still a lot of penalties.
Yeah.
You know so it's a struggle. But I have never – I have yet to meet the head coach or that has – says, listen, here's how we're going to get rid of penalties. The only guy I ever saw do it was Bill Parcells. And it was he handled penalties just like he handled fumbles. If you're getting penalties like that, you're sitting down and the other guy's going in until he makes a mistake and then you can go back in. I mean he just absolutely benches guys. Most coaches don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Especially in today and the Bills, quite frankly, don't have the depth to do that.
Right.
But in all honesty, I mean, how many of those penalties came in the third and fourth quarter? You know, guys that probably won't even be on your team.
Maybe.
Week one.
And I said to Donald, we're watching practice today. I said, Saturday night, let's see how many penalties the first teamers take. They'll play the first half, you would think. That'll be, I think, an accurate indicator of where they're at with the penalties.
You know, and I've had people tweet me about this and saying things like Sean McDermott, he's trying to bring this disciplined approach. Well, obviously it's not working. And I'm like, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, I remember when I was in New England and Coach Belichick, if you jumped off sides or something like that, you know, he would make the entire team, coaches, everybody do push-ups and all of that stuff. But ultimately, when you get on the field, it's not going to stop you from, you know, making penalties if you're not focused on the field in the game.
Yeah, people saying he doesn't have a handle on the team or he's not – listen, that's ridiculous because here's the thing. When those players get out on the field in the preseason game, it is their chance to make an NFL roster. Every play is the most important play they have ever played at any level in their entire life. They can't think of anything else. So they are desperate, and they are pressing hard. So they want to win every play. In fact, they think they're going to win the Super Bowl in the third quarter of a preseason game, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of attitude they go in there thinking. So they're overdoing it. They're pressing. They're holding guys. If a guy gets an advantage on them, they're desperate to get back in the play, so they grab jerseys or they hold. The offensive lineman grabs. He lets his arms extend, whatever it may be. All this stuff happens because you got young guys who think that guy getting away from them on one play is taking his lifelong dream away. And that's why you get a lot of penalties. Guys are just emotionally too wrapped up in it.
You know, this goes back to me, and obviously you guys can tell, I like the inter-squad scrimmages that teams have. I really like that. I think it changes the intensity of practice. But I also think that it helps out with, you know, you go against the same guy every day for 2 weeks in training camp.
you know how this guy plays. I know how every single cornerback likes to cover me, you know, so I know how to beat him. I know how he's going to try and stop me. But if you go up against somebody else, I don't know what he likes to do. And I haven't had a chance to really watch him on film or any of that stuff. I think when these guys get into games, we know they don't game plan for the first and second preseason game. There's a little bit for the third one. But you don't know if a guy's going to hit you with a spin move or something like that. You're a left tackle. And all of a sudden, you've been going against this guy in practice that likes to just bull rush you. And this dude hits you with a spin move, and you end up holding because you don't want him to hit your quarterback. So I think there's really some advantages to that inter-squad scrimmages stuff because you need to go up against other guys.
I think Coach McDermott, Steve, and Donald and I spoke about this the other day, Friday, made a really good point about a lot of the penalties are because of failure of being in the right position. Mm-hmm. And you've got guys who maybe – you know, aren't athletic enough to block somebody or maybe aren't athletic enough to avoid a block in the back and they're not in good position, so they reach or hold or grab or push from behind or commit pass interference. I mean, a lot of that is not being good enough.
Yeah, some of it's not being good enough. Some of it is just not knowing the right technique and what's important on the play. I'll give you a special teams example. Say, for instance, you're on a punt return team and you've got a guy, you know, you're lined up across from the guard or the tackle, and your job is to make sure, you know, he gets blocked. Well, what happens is if you're inexperienced, you think, all right, I'm going to block him right here at the line of scrimmage. And well, when the guy gets loose, he's ahead of you. Now you chase him the whole way down, and you end up hitting him in the back because you got lost. When in reality, if you knew what you were doing, you bang the guy once, and then you turn and run.
Right.
You turn your back on him and maybe keep your eye on him and look over your shoulder, but you keep a position on the other, you know, downfield from him. So by not knowing that in the first place, you end up chasing the guy down the field and pushing him because you're not really in tune with the technique of doing it. But when you bang the guy at the line of scrimmage and then turn and outrun him down to get in front of the returner, now you're between him and the returner. You're not going to block him in the back.
Right.
That's the kind of thing, and there's a million techniques for every position across the line, across the offense and defense that are exactly like that because you didn't know exactly the technique that would work on that situation.
Right.
You end up getting out of position, and that's what we're talking about. You end up holding or blocking in the back or illegal contact or what have you.
Donald and I with Steve Tasker. He'll call the game on Saturday night, the Bills and the Baltimore Ravens. We're talking about the Bills, talking about the right look for preseason, how many games and how should they be structured. Anything on your plate, give us a call, 803-0550. And toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. This caller is not from Buffalo. He's from outside Buffalo, Hawaii. Emmanuel from Hawaii. Welcome to the show, Emmanuel. Aloha.
Hey, good morning. Aloha. Sunny as usual. I would like to talk
about
winning. I think as I've been watching teams over the years, teams don't start winning until they rebuild their offensive line. We need like a boring draft where we draft some guards and tackles. As you watch Dallas over time, they started with their offensive line. You know, when that Johnny Manziel pick came up, they drafted an offensive lineman. We need to stop going with the entertainment picks. You know, I think the NFL's became like the NBA in a sense of, hey, if we get a Odell Beckham, then we're on a sell tickets. And it's almost latent where we don't recognize it. But if you start building the offensive line over years, the team will start winning. I think the Bills haven't done that in a very long time. We haven't had a good offensive line in about 10, 15 years, of which – consequently, we've been out of the playoffs for that long.
Well, I mean, a couple of things, Emmanuel. They did use a second-round pick this year on an offensive lineman, Deion Dawkins. They have a first-rounder, Eric Wood, at center. Cordy Glenn is a second-rounder.
They lost Daniel Levitre to free agency. He was a second-rounder.
Richie's a Pro Bowler.
I think here's the thing, too, and Emmanuel's got a point. I mean, I agree with him totally. You look at Dallas Cowboys and – and I'll exaggerate to make
and
a point. Just about any running back in the draft last year would have had a really nice year behind that offensive line in Dallas, like Ezekiel Elliott did. Now, Ezekiel's a great running back. But let's face it, he's got some hosses up ahead of him that really bulldozed the way for him. That was a great offensive line. Same thing in Oakland. They got into the conversation again in the playoff hunt with a good, you know, the quarterback, obviously, with Derek Carr, but that offensive line was dominant. So Emmanuel's got a point. But I think here, you look at this team, I mean, they've run, for me, an offensive line is about running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Who runs it better than this team? Nobody. These guys can get out and run. I mean, they can run and play it. Now, there's questions about their depth, no doubt. But they did, like you said, they spent a second-round pick this year on a guy. They're working on that. So I think, I mean, who are you going to replace? I mean, you know, John Miller had maybe the most improved year of any offensive lineman in the NFL last year per Pro Football Focus. So they look at these guys. I mean, this guy stepped it up. So this is an offensive line that's actually very good, I think, given what they're doing. Now, listen, the Bills are going to look different because they have a different type of quarterback. Tyrod is a playmaker. He's an athlete. He's got a big, strong arm and throws the deep ball. The intermediate and crossing and the reading of the defenses and picking the team apart, that's not what this team's going to be about. It's going to be about defense. It's going to be about running the football, not turning it over at the quarterback position, and the deep ball. That's how they're going to win games. That's in the past, if everything was equal.
Right.
But, you know, last year their defense betrayed them because this is an offense that scored 27 points a game. That's pretty good. So, yeah, you can say what you want. I agree with Emmanuel, the caller. The offensive line is where you always start. But, man, they got some other issues right now. This offensive line is pretty good, I think. By comparison to anybody across the league, they're very good.
But they need Cordy.
They definitely need Cordy on the left side of left tackle. And we don't know if he's going to be in there for the full season with that foot injury.
Well, listen, you can't think a foot injury in March or April is going to keep your left tackle off the field. You're not going to draft a left tackle when you got one. All he's got is a sore foot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, so you can't. I mean, I get it, but Cordy's, you know, if Cordy goes out there and plays, I mean, they're going to be good again.
But if he doesn't,
but listen. If somebody sideswipes him in the Jeep, you know.
No, but here we are, less than 3 weeks from the opener, and Cordy is progressing.
There's no question it's a concern.
There's no guarantee.
No question
it's a concern.
No question. But that's the same for any team.
You know, and just to your other point of Tyrod and the way he plays, then people's arguments would be, well, why'd you trade Sammy away? You know, Sammy, if he was your deep threat and Tyrod liked to go to Sammy, now it seems like you have a team full of, like, possession receivers. You know, and guys, and we'll see who's going to be the deep threat on this
roster.
Well,
listen, Zay's fast enough to be a deep threat. He can take the lid off of it. And the other guys, Andre Holmes, a big target. So Rod Streeter's a bigger target. You got some guys that can – Streeter can run.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got enough speed there. They're fine. And believe me, listen, this team had, some speed last year and the year before. And I can't think of the receiver's name is now out west. The little guy at USC,
Marquise Goodwin.
He's
having a good.
Nobody could catch that guy, but he had like three catches,
right,
a year.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to be better than that. You got to be better than that.
Steve Tasker with us in studio. We'll take your phone calls about Bills related topics. Jack in Rochester has a question. Jack, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've got a question for both Steve and Donald. I mean, you started out as players, and then you were viewing the game as a player, kind of from the inside out. And then you became analyst, and you started to look at the game kind of from the outside in. When you started to become analyst, what was your biggest realization about football that you never saw before? I mean, this aha that you didn't see or understand as players, but when you became analyst, now you see it.
That's a good question, Jack.
For me, like, I can see hits actually going to happen before they happen. Like, I can see it forming from far ways apart, and I'm like, wow, like, these dudes are crazy. They're actually out there playing football. That was the biggest realization for me, is just how hard these dudes hit at this level, and then just really how athletic guys are when they make certain plays.
Yeah, you can see how good you have to be to get in the door, no question about it. I mean, and Mike McCarthy was on. I saw an interview with Mike McCarthy yesterday, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, and he said, all you guys, you know, look at these players like this. Listen, if you're in this, if you got a contract in an NFL team, you're a really good player, period. Yeah. End of story. And he's right. Even in these preseason games, I mean, you go out there and stand on the sidelines, you see guys you've never heard of doing stuff. It's like, wait, who is that guy,
exactly,
right? And it's a lot of that. But for me, doing the work I do with CBS, so I do I don't have any skin in the game. I'm not an alumni of the team, and I don't cheer for either one of the teams. And the thing that I noticed first, and I'll tell you I'll confess this to you, my first game as an analyst was between the Buffalo Bills and the San Diego Chargers in San Diego, way back in the day with Rob Johnson, Doug Flutie, that it was Wade Phillips' first year. Mm-hmm. It was my first game in the booth, and I remember the ball getting kicked into the air and thinking to myself, it doesn't matter to me who wins. I hope it's a close game. You know, that's what I – because I'm telling you, you know, I was puking in the sink thinking, we got to win this game. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to play well. We've got to win.
Yeah.
And the pressure, and you're almost physically ill from the pressure that you put on yourself to play well and help the guys that you're looking around the room, you love and respect all these guys, and you've been through a lot together. You got some pressure on you from within.
Yeah.
And then when you're out of it and you're up in the booth, it's like, pfft, hope you guys really play well. You know, good luck.
And, you know, for me,
there's no scoreboard in the booth.
I was in an airport. I was in Dallas in the airport. And the TSA agent, he comes up to me. For some reason, he just looks at me. He's like, what team do you like? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, first of all, I had a Bills book bag on. So he looked at the – first I'm like, well, I don't really have a team that I like. And he was like, well, what planet you from? And, and I'm like, hey, man, I was like, I just don't really have a team that I cheer for. And then somebody points out my book bag, and I'm like, well, you know, I work for the team. I play for the Bills. So, yeah, obviously I root for them to do good. I want the Bills to win. But I was like, I have friends all around the league. I just want my guys to play well, the guys that I know I want them to play well. And it's just like Steve was saying, like, you look at it and you're like, man, I don't have to go out there and play. I don't have to be stressed about this thing anymore.
I'll tell you,
as a player, you are so stressed out.
I got to tell you, too. Now, people are sitting there thinking, hey, you guys are a Bills fan. Listen, I am. But, I want the Bills to win because of Buffalo. And the guys that, like Murph, I mean, you're in this building all day, every day. There's people in One Bills Drive, people that most people don't know, not the players. I'm talking about staff and people have been here for 20 years, 25 years, 15 years, 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I want the team to win for all of them and the team and the town,
right.
The city, because I know what it means to the city and all the people that I know who have, you know, followed me and friends of mine. That's why I want to see the Bills do well.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, it's on them. You know, the players, they get it. They get their own reward when they win and they play well. They all get their own reward. But for the rest of us, you know, it's about us,
yeah.
not even about them. It's about us and being together in the city. So, you know, that's why I do root for the Bills, but for the city, not for the team.
Right.
803-0550 toll free 1-888-552-550. A call from DJ in Hamburg. Hello, DJ.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good. I'm
going dead a little bit here. So as far as preseason goes, I agree with Steve. I would like to see the first game, the veterans a quarter, the rookies three quarters. Second game, veterans a half. They need the reps, and rookies a half. As far as Steve's thought about 18 games, I'm for it. I'm interested in that because it creates strategy. Coaches have to decide what personnel they're going to use against certain teams, and would make fantasy football people pretty data be pretty creative with how they're going to go about that.
So
I think
see Murph, there's more people as of now. More people agree with me than you.
1-0.
That's right. It's 1-0.
1-0. He wins. 1-0. It doesn't matter how you win. It just matters that you won.
And we're going to stop this segment right now while I'm in the lead.
Steve, have a great broadcast Saturday night. You're ready for it, right?
Yeah, now. Yeah, it will be fun. Baltimore is going to be a nice little measuring stick. I don't know how much time they're going to go, whether Sean McDermott's an old school guy. We'll find out. We talked to him Friday morning at 8:30. He'll tell us what their plan is. If it's as it has always been, maybe they're going to give the starters past halftime. Let them go in for halftime, stay warm, stay loose, and get in and make some adjustments, then come back out and start the second half. That's always something you want your guys to go through. And the third game is usually the one they do it on. So,
yep. 7 o'clock, Steve will be there with Andrew Catalan, Mike Catalana. We'll be on the radio for the Bills in Baltimore. Jordan Matthews, we don't know if we'll see him in that game, but we're going to talk to him in just a minute here on the show. Thank you, Steve Tasker, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good seeing you again.
We got more to come. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Donald eating his lunch in the middle of the show. What do you got going on over there?
Just
a little chicken salad?
Yeah, just a salad. You
okay,
know. You okay? Trying not to crunch.
John Murphy, Donald Jones, thanks again to Steve Tasker. And joining us in studio, just off the practice field, happy to have new Bills wide receiver Jordan Matthews in studio, 11 days from the trade that brought you here. Do you feel settled in yet?
Yeah, I'm definitely getting settled in. A lot of really nice people here at in Buffalo that have been helping me get acclimated. Not even just in the facility, you know, on the team, but even just people in the community helping me with, you know, getting moved in and stuff like that. My mom's come up, you know, and she's been helping me out a lot. So it's definitely been an easy transition. And like I said, it kind of helps when the people here are really nice.
You know, we were talking off air, and you were telling me that you live in Nashville now.
Yes.
Any similarities between Buffalo and Nashville? Neat little city. Downtown?
Yeah. You know, I was actually talking to my mom about it. You know, when I left college football in Nashville and went straight to Philadelphia, it was a little bit of a different market, mm-hmm. different type of expectation, a different type of fan base. When I came to Buffalo now, Buffalo reminds me a little bit more of when I was in Nashville because the city cares a lot about its football team. But other than that, it's very chill. It's very quaint. It's very family-like. You can get, you know, here and back extremely easy. And in Philadelphia, it seemed like rush hour traffic 24/7. Yeah. Things are like bullets flying. And then when the football game's on, there's even more bullets flying. Yeah. So there was really no rest. And, you know, just coming here has definitely been a peaceful transition. And I'm really looking forward to getting back out there on the field with the guys.
Jordan, you won't remember this, but we met before at the Senior Bowl, right? 2013.
Yes, sir.
And maybe you'll remember this because I got in trouble. It was we knew going down there.
You got in trouble.
Yeah, listen to this story. We knew going down there that you were one of the premier receivers. The Bills needed a receiver. I think you had a great Senior Bowl week, as I recall.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty good. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Pretty good. And there was one day they had you, you know, Senior Bowl is great, but they had you go into an autograph tent. And I hadn't interviewed you yet, and we're kind of waiting. And finally, the security people got mad at me and my photographer. What are you doing? We're waiting for Jordan Matthews. Get out of here. And I, like, got into an argument with a security guy.
Yeah.
I think I got one question in on you, and they kind of pulled me away. It was kind of ugly. You don't remember that. But
you got to be like, you know who I am? I got my own show, bro.
You know who I am in Buffalo?
Yeah, you know, Mobile, Alabama. What is this, bro? Yeah, you gotta check them, bro. But I'm from Alabama, so you should have called me over, and I would have got them right, man. I would have got them right for you.
But we knew back then, and you had the good week, and, you know, it was an incredible draft, obviously, year for receivers. But at the Senior Bowl, I remember distinctly feeling you kind of set yourself aside from the pack a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it was actually a unique situation because, you know, of all those receivers that came out in my class that are really good, I was the first senior taken. That's what people don't realize, and that's what's so unique about that class. You know, you're talking about Sammy, who I know is well-respected here, early guy to come out. You got Brandon Cooks, Odell Beckham, Mike Evans, Jarvis Landry, Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee. I mean, the list goes on. I was the first senior in that whole bunch. Devontae Adams doing great with the Green Bay Packers. I think the next senior to go maybe was John Brown, who went to the Cardinals. You know, so it was definitely a situation where when I went to the Senior Bowl, I knew I was kind of competing against myself because I knew I wasn't looking out there and seeing the other guys that were on those high draft boards. So I said, this is a chance for me to set myself apart, tell these coaches, like, hey, I really don't technically have to be here, but I'm still going to come because I just love the game. I want to show you guys that I just love football, that I want to be around the game. Any chance I have a play, I'm going to play, and I think it definitely went well.
We talk with Phil Savage a lot on this show, the guy who runs the Senior Bowl, and that's a point that he makes, and it's true. Guys can because of not everybody's there, the underclassmen aren't there, the Senior Bowl is a great opportunity for guys to establish a name for themselves and really, in your case and many others, improve their draft stock, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, if you're in any situation where I think especially receivers, you know, quarterbacks, positions where you know there's less likely, you know, it's crazy I'm talking about this, but it's less likely for you to get hurt. You want to definitely go do that. I understand running backs' arguments. If you're high on the draft board and you're a running back, the less contact, the better going into draft day. I know even Christian McCaffrey took some heat, but he still got drafted high. Even he didn't even play in his bowl game.
Yeah.
So those situations I get, but if you're a receiver, you're a quarterback, and you can show on film and in person with these scouts that you can get open and make plays, you need to take those opportunities.
Now, you came out with that crazy draft class. Mm-hmm. Do you play with that chip on your shoulder because those guys went ahead of you? Is that something you really play with and you will play with your entire career?
Yeah, definitely. You know, especially because a lot of those guys were in the SEC with me too. You know, when it came to Mike, Jarvis and Odell, you know, specifically, those guys were in the same division as me in college. So I was studying their games. I was always checking what were their stats at the end of college games, like where do I stand? And, you know, it was really it kept me on my toes because when I was at Vanderbilt, you know, for a while. I had other great receivers there with me, but at the same time, I felt like I separated myself, and I was like, I got to make sure I'm looking at guys around the country too so they can continue to motivate me and help me get better. But like I said, man, that's a strong list. So if you ever need motivation, you can just look at what those guys are doing, and you'll definitely make sure you're on your P's and Q's.
You talked about the Senior Bowl and really saying, look, I don't really have to be here, but I'm going to do it because you love the game and you want to improve your draft status. Did you have that fear, though, of I might – decline my draft status, or you know, mines might drop just because I might not have a good week?
You know, there's always that hesitation, but at the same time, that's one of the main things I wanted to show, is that like I'm not afraid of that. I'm confident in my ability. I knew that if you give me a solid week to compete, that I'm going to be able to go out there and show you exactly who I am. You know, sometimes I even think that a week wasn't long enough, because I know that over time, consistency, that's where I'm going to show you where I separate myself from other people, you know. That's why I think the combine is one of those things that's so weird, because a guy has one bad day, it's like, okay, his draft stock goes completely out the window, but he put together a whole college career production. I think sometimes that thing's a little bit kind of overhyped. But, yeah, in a situation like that, I knew, you know, that there was a risk, but I still felt like I was willing to take it.
With Jordan Matthews, Bills wide receiver, just off the practice field. Jordan acquired 11 days ago in that trade with the Eagles. You had established over 3 years pretty much a role, a pretty defined, clear role for yourself with the Eagles. You must have, not that you felt comfortable, but you must have felt like, this is my NFL career. It's getting off to a good start, and I know what I have to do here.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I had a great relationship with those guys, with those coaches, especially with my quarterback. And me and Carson had become friends, you know, and I knew that he was going to be the franchise guy there. So I guess at that point, I was like, okay, well, this is the quarterback that I know I'm going to be working with for a long time. Up to that point, when I was in Vanderbilt, I played with, I think, five quarterbacks over 4 years, maybe six. I think one guy came in for like three plays and got hurt, but hey, that's the breaks. Yeah. And then I got to the NFL, and over the course of 3 years, I had Nick Foles, Mark Sanchez, Sam Bradford, and Carson Wentz. So it's 3 years, four quarterbacks. So I was like, okay, well, finally, I'm going to have the same quarterback for 2 years in a row. And then, obviously, you know, that I was in a comfortable position, but obviously that all changed. And now I'm working with my now fifth quarterback in 4 years. But like I said, I'm equipped for it. It's something that I feel like you just got to be able to adapt to. That's why with my game, I pride myself on being consistent, being where I need to be, you know, so it doesn't matter who's back there under center.
You know, how important is it for you or for receivers that relationship with the quarterback? We all know about the timing and everything on the field, but just that relationship with the quarterback, between the quarterback and receiver. I mean, you even said you have one of his puppies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I do. No, we were talking about that. Yeah, I do.
He has one of his puppies. His dog had puppies, and he got one of them. So how important is that relationship between a wide receiver and a quarterback?
You know, it's huge. I think it's one of those things that sometimes is overhyped a little bit. You know, I think sometimes people have this assumption that quarterbacks and receivers are basically living together and throwing every single day. That's not the case. But when you're in the building, having a great relationship with that guy is huge, because there's plays on the field where we break the huddle. In my mind, I'm thinking the same thing as him. And we got to be on that same page. I got this corner on me. The ball has to go here. It has to come here now. And he's already thinking, I see this corner on Jordan. It's a mismatch. It's a mismatch. I can go exploit that. I'm giving it to my guy. And it's just having that type of, you know, relationship, it makes the whole game fun. It makes it that much easier. When you're constantly trying to shuffle through and trying to figure out guys, it makes it a little bit harder. The thing that I feel like I'm fortunate with is I played with really good quarterbacks and really smart guys that actually care. All guys have different skill sets. Nick had a great deep ball. Mark was very good on the move. I feel like Carson had a combination of both. Sam was extremely accurate. And now I'm here with Tyrod. I feel like Tyrod, one, is the most athletic of all of them by far. He's able to improv, but a guy with that type of skill set, usually you think that guy's going to depend on his athleticism. But Tyrod prides himself on knowing the offense, making sure he can get guys where they need to be, and also trying to make plays downfield with his arm. And with that type of dual threat and that type of focus, I knew I was going to be able to come in here and we were going to be able to hit the ball rolling. So I'm not too worried about it.
Now, we talk about Tyrod. We know, you know, he likes to break contain. What's it like for you as a receiver knowing that he has to break contain and you need to get into his line of sight? Have you played with a guy like that in the past?
I think Carson probably was is the most similar. Mark was really good on the run, but we set up plays, naked boots for Mark to throw on the run. Carson, there were a lot of plays where he would break the pocket And then you had to actually be able to, like, do scramble drill to be able to get into his vision. So with a guy like Tyrod, that's definitely something that you want to be want to make you sure you hold yourself accountable for. You look at the Green Bay Packers. You know, Aaron Rodgers might not be looked at in a sense of as a scrambler. He escapes the pocket all the time. And those guys, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, they do an amazing job of scramble drill, pushing up against guys, making DBs think they're going deep, and then breaking down to the sideline, and then getting quick dumps. I mean, those are easy plays. I mean, think about it. Mike Evans made a career of it in college football with Johnny Manziel. So it's just one of those things. You got a quarterback like that, that has to be a huge part of our offense. So
with Jordan Matthews, Bills wide receiver, of course, your time here, 11 days now, but to be you get the trade, and then 2 days later in Rochester, you get banged up. What happened? That was late in that Sunday practice, right? A couple of Sundays ago?
You know, what was crazy, it was actually my first pass as a Bill. First pass. And it was probably one of the most unfortunate things because I knew the ball was coming to me. And the way the corner set up at the beginning of the play, I'm like, all right, Tyrod's going to put this thing back shoulder. I'm about to dunk on this boy. And it's going to be – everybody's going to go wild. Like, welcome to the Bills. J-Mass here. He throws a perfect ball. I go up, get it, and right when I hit the ground, all of a sudden I feel like my chest just kind of like – I'm not going to say explode. Like, don't get crazy. But it just didn't feel right. And at the same time, I kind of tensed up, and I was like, okay, well, I know I didn't hit my head on the ground because my head felt fine. I was conscious. I was coherent. But at the same time, I was like, man, something doesn't feel right. Now, I still went through practice. I was like, there's no way. Yeah, I finished practice. Like, there's no way my first day as a Buffalo Bill, I cracked open my chest. There's no way it happened. And so at this point, I'm kind of in denial. Go through the rest of practice, and I'm still able to finish. I got adrenaline going, you know, the whole time. So catch a few more balls, but we get to the end of practice, and it just starts stiffening up on me when we go to stretch. My fiance actually was able to come, and I went over to her, and I said, hey, I think we gotta go to the hospital. She's like, you're joking. Like, I wish I was. And so I knew it was something, but fortunately, it wasn't serious as I thought it could have been. It definitely is an injury that you have to monitor and have to make sure you manage the pain. But it's also, you know, something that if you're going to injure something at this point of the season, you know, this is probably what you want to injure. No, you don't want to mess with the head because we know about all those studies and anything lower body extremity. You need the legs. You need to stay in shape. You need to stay ready to play. But this is more just pain management, getting the swelling back down, getting the inflammation down, and then they'll be able to protect it by the time we're ready to go.
You ever had a cracked rib?
Never had a cracked rib.
I've heard it's similar to having a cracked rib. Yeah. Where it hurt you to breathe and do all that.
It hurts you to breathe, sneeze. A funny movie came out. Didn't go see it because I was like, I'm not even trying to go through that. So.
And what will they do? They'll pad you up with some sort of vest, protective vest, when it comes time to get back out there?
Yeah. They actually made something for me today. I wasn't even in really during, like, the contact stuff.
Right.
But they still just wanted me to try it on. So, yeah, it felt good. I think they'll actually order something from a company that makes them specifically. And they'll have that for me in a couple of days, but they're definitely doing their best to protect me.
New endorsement deal?
Yeah, for sure.
You gotta work
I got to find
that.
The name of that. I got to find the name of it.
You mentioned adjusting to Tyrod. Have you been able to catch many passes with him since you got banged up a couple of Sundays ago?
Yeah, you know, I've been able to get back in the individual. Like, today was probably, you know, the day I felt the best because I was able to come out, go through routes on air, really getting the individual drills, and then even after practice, get some extra routes with them, you know, and just get some pitch and catch. You know, I know as a young team, you know, corners are going to come out and press us, so we're not about to get a whole bunch of off coverage. Right. So it's probably a very unrealistic look, but at the same time, you know, just being able to get to run around and get the timing down, you know, just on some pitch and catch, and it definitely felt good today to be able to do that.
What type of receiver would you call yourself, or, you know, what would you say you do best? I mean, I know people, you were very productive out there. People have called you a possession receiver. What type of receiver would you say you are?
I definitely say that I'm versatile and I'm consistent. You know, I'm going to say that when you line up a lot of receivers, there's going to be probably one go-to move. They're probably most of the time a jack of, you know, one trade. You got a speed guy downfield. You got a guy who's going to play big. I feel like in all areas, I'm going to be always humble about my game. I need to improve in all areas. I'm never going to act like I have it all figured out. Mm-hmm. But I think in every single area of the game, I can hurt you, you know. And so I think a lot of times when people watch me just in that one nutshell, they say, oh, well, he could be better this, could be better this. But when you put me on a team aspect and you line me up, that quarterback is going to be confident in me. He's going to know that 87 is going to be where he needs to be. He's going to make plays, and I'm going to be able to count on him every single Sunday. And that's what I always want to be, is a guy who is accountable for what he needs to go do, and that he just goes out there and makes plays. I have fun with it. You know, at Vanderbilt, there's going to be a lot of single coverage, double coverage, making sure people roll over to you because you're the main guy.
Yeah.
You're playing Florida Alabama. So I got used to being the guy. So now in the NFL, when you're one of the guys amongst other guys, it's so much easier to go out there and play free and have fun with it. That's what I'm trying to do.
Let's talk about this. You got a question, Mark?
No, go ahead.
Because my question is going to be totally off topic. So you
okay.
Gotta,
we got to let Jordan go here in a minute, but go ahead.
All right, well, let's talk about this 87 number.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, 87 is not the – the sexiest number for receivers.
Yeah. You want to know? Okay, no, I'll tell you a story behind it. You know, I didn't have a sexy recruiting process. That's how, that's how it happened. So basically, I was the last receiver to get a scholarship to Vanderbilt. I had no scholarships other than Vanderbilt.
Where were you from?
So
where in
Alabama?
Yeah,
I was from Alabama.
What part of Alabama?
Huntsville, okay. Alabama. So okay. I had no scholarships. Alabama, Auburn, Jacksonville State, Alabama A&M didn't offer me. DeVry University online, they didn't offer me. I had no scholarship offers, zero, okay? So when I got done playing high school football, you know, my mom was like, okay, you need to start sending out some applications because the football thing ain't working out. And I told her, just give me at least a month, okay, before I go the academic route. Like, I just feel like something's going to come through. Vanderbilt has been sending letters, but nobody really had made that, pulled that trigger to say, hey, we're going to give you a scholarship offer. Now, Bradley Roby, who plays for the Denver Broncos, he ends up decommitting from Vanderbilt. He's be committed to Vanderbilt. Decommits and ends up going to Ohio State. Once he goes to Ohio State, that was on Christmas Eve, I got a call Christmas Eve night from Robbie Caldwell, the offensive line coach at the time, calls me up and says, Jordan, you just got Bradley Roby's scholarship because he decommitted. Finally got my scholarship, go to Vanderbilt. They tell me to come up for my official visit. When I come up, it's me, Jonathan Krause, Chris Boyd, and Trent Pruitt. So me amongst three other receivers. And they say, you know, we're talking about what numbers we're going to get. We're at the spring game. I already know I'm the last scholarship offer. So I'm like, I'm not going to probably get a good number choice. You know, it's not looking too good. I already got the last scholarship to come in here. And there's this one kid who probably never played a down in football. Looked like a walk-on. Like he was fresh out of the chemistry lab. Mm-hmm. He's got on 87 at practice. And this vet heard us talking. He turns around and says, one of y'all going to be wearing 87. One of y'all freshmen. I know y'all think y'all about to get some single-digit numbers. One of y'all going to be wearing number 87. We're like, nah, it ain't going to be me. It ain't going to be me. Man, so literally a month later, I guess our coach was really good friends. Our receivers coach was really good friends with one of the receivers that was already committed. He sends them a text message and says, hey, you got number 9. So Trent goes on Facebook and posts, hey, I got number 9. I can't wait to get to Vanderbilt. So I'm like, oh, we finally got our numbers. So then I call Coach. Coach, what number did I get? He said, hold on, I'm going to go look and I'll text you. Ding! 87. I was like, no. It was so trash, bro. A tight end wore before me. It looked like a dress. It was so bad. But my freshman year, I played. I didn't redshirt. I played. And then the last four games, we were doing so bad. I mean, we were losing like 60-0 to Florida. It was Vanderbilt at his worst.
Yeah.
And but then all of a sudden, they threw me a touchdown late in the game. I caught it one-handed, first touchdown of my career. One-handed catch versus Florida, touchdown. Then the next three games I played in, I scored a touchdown in all three games. So I ended the season with four touchdowns and actually led the team in receiving touchdowns and only played in four games as a freshman.
Yeah.
And so my dad was like, hey, you're doing good. I'm going to get the jersey. So he gets this 87 jersey, and we were cheap. Like, he can't waste $100, so I had to keep it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was 87 the rest of college, broke the SEC receiving record, catches and yards. So that was really my number. I wanted to go to the Eagles and get it. Brent Celek had it. And so when I came here, you know, I was finally able to snag it back. So that's my number. That's what everybody back in Vanderbilt, they know me for. So for other people clown me, bro. So you're not the first one.
I know
one.
They do. I'm the first receiver, one. So I know this.
Yeah,
deal,
yeah. I know how it is. But that's me, man. 87, man. That's my number. You know, my girl plays soccer, actually. My fiance plays professional soccer. And I'm like, look, if you're really down for this, you know, marriage, you're 87. You know, you won't care what people think. You know,
she's like, that's ugly.
Yeah, she ain't about it yet. But we'll see. She got an eternity to figure it out.
Jordan, you're a delight to talk to. It's great to meet you. Thanks for coming by here today. We appreciate
no
it.
No doubt. Thanks, guys.
Jordan Matthews, Bills receiver, joining us, number 87 in your program for the Buffalo Bills. Donald and I back with
one of your hearts. Number one of your hearts.
Yeah. And we're back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. A couple of minutes left in this hour. Got another hour to go. We will revisit our discussion about what you want to see out of preseason, what would make for the ideal preseason. But all of us, I think, come away impressed with Jordan Matthews.
Jordan Matthews, yeah. He's
storyteller.
Yeah.
A good record of production in the NFL. Seems well-adjusted to the trade here. I mean, that still would be a shock to the system 11 days ago.
Man, what? And especially when you've been productive, you get a guy who you can start to see he's going to be the franchise quarterback. You know, and he has that good relationship
right.
with them. And it's like, all right, and he's throwing you the ball like that, and you're like, man, this is going to be my dude. I'm going to get a lot of passes, help this team win, you know, help us get to the playoffs, be one of the best receivers in the league. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're
yeah.
gone, and
yeah.
you got to go to a totally different city and now have to build relationships with your guys and all the quarterback and everything, start all over basically. And that's what he's had to do. He seems like he has the personality to do it, though. You
right.
know, he'll be able to
right.
adjust and bond with Tyrod, and
but
hopefully they get a good
relationship.
But you
can't just flip the switch, though. That's the
thing. He can't. It's going to take time. I mean, the relationship, look, they're going to be like, what's good, bro? Like,
yeah.
But there's not going to be that on-field bond where Tyrod automatically knows Jordan Matthews is going to be open on this route. Tyrod is going to start off going to Charles Clay and going to Shady, but it's going to take some games before he – watches film and says, wow, like Jordan is actually getting open over there. Let me start to go to him a little bit more often. I will say this, though. With Jordan Matthews, his personality and the stuff that he's been through, and talking about the Senior Bowl and all of that stuff, and the production that he's had down in Philadelphia, and we talk about this leadership in that room, I do think with his personality, he will be a help to those younger guys, especially a guy like Zay Jones, who
yeah.
played in the Senior Bowl and has gone through some of the same things.
Yeah. You know what you're run up against, though, and we saw it, and Lorenzo admitted it, Lorenzo Alexander, a year ago. It was hard for him to come in as a first-year guy and assume a leadership role.
Some
guys can do it maybe quicker than others. Maybe Jordan can do that.
Yeah,
but this is the problem with a constant roster churn,
yeah.
you know, changeover like this.
It's hard to do. You know,
Jordan
because
Matthews might want to sit back for a little while and say, what's this room all about? Wide receivers, what's this group all about here? What's this offense all about?
Exactly. It's hard for a guy like Anquan Boldin.
Yeah.
You know, because you're –
Who?
The fact of the matter is you're in a new building, you know, like Lorenzo. Lorenzo was what, 12 years in the league when he
yeah.
when he got here? He's in a totally new building, you know, has been in the league, has been to a Pro Bowl. Now he's been to two, but he had already been to one Pro Bowl. To come in and just be a leader, I mean, you just don't know who the leaders are on the team, and you don't want to be that guy that comes in and you're all loud and everything, you know, so you kind of just sit back and keep to yourself.
If you missed the interview with Jordan Matthews, it'll be up on our website a little bit later on this afternoon. We've got another whole hour to go, and we're going to hear from Tyrod Taylor, his comments after practice today. We'll hear from some other players in the Buffalo locker room. Practice ended about 45 minutes ago or so ago. We'll talk more about that. And how do you want to see preseason move forward? How many games are necessary in preseason? What should they look like? What should the structure be? We will revisit that discussion when we return. An hour to go, the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones. We're presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
From One Bills Drive, the Buffalo Bills have wrapped up their Tuesday practice. They've got a preseason game coming up at the end of the week, and they practice today as they will tomorrow and the next day. Head coach Sean McDermott said they held running back Jonathan Williams out today. He is day-to-day with a knee injury suffered on Sunday in practice. Linebacker Ramon Humber limited today with an oblique muscle strain. Defensive lineman Marcel Darius limited today with a quad muscle strain. As far as Cordy Glenn, progressing according to the coach, moving forward. Glenn and Jordan Matthews both limited in walkthrough work today. The Bills and the Baltimore Ravens coming up Saturday night, 7 o'clock. Coverage on the radio starts at 5 o'clock with our pregame show on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. The father of Bills Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly has passed away. Joe Kelly passed away last night. He had been in hospice care, according to Jim Kelly, in Dunedin, Florida, with his sons at his side. Jim Kelly issued a statement on Instagram yesterday saying, words cannot describe how much I love my father and how deeply brokenhearted our entire family is right now. Giants wide receiver Odell Beckham appears to have escaped serious injury despite an ugly hit last night in the Giants preseason loss in Cleveland to the Browns. He was diagnosed with an ankle sprain left in the second quarter after a hit delivered by Browns cornerback Brian Body Calhoun, a leaping catch for Odell Beckham. Beckham was back on the sidelines in the second half, said he doesn't think there's any doubt he'll be ready to play the season opener against the Dallas Cowboys on September 10th. A dozen Browns players took a knee during the national anthem in prayer last night before the preseason kickoff, including tight end Seth Duvall, who became the first known white NFL player to take a knee during the national anthem. Quarterbacks around the league, Hugh Jackson of the Browns says he'll have his quarterback decision, the starting quarterback decision, by Wednesday. Brock Osweiler got the start last night for the second straight week. The Jets expect to name their starting quarterback next Monday. It is expected to be Josh McCown. And the Broncos late yesterday named Trevor Siemian as their starting quarterback. Vance Joseph saying Siemian was a clear-cut winner. John Murphy, Donald Jones, the final hour of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive, the Bills off the practice wheel. I got a couple of things I want to run by you here, Donald.
Okay, run them.
Seth Duvall, tight end, last night with the Cleveland Browns, the first known white NFL player to take a knee during the national anthem. He said events in Charlottesville, Virginia had a lot to do with his decision, mm-hmm. but he said there was more involved. His wife is African-American.
Yes,
you know
she is.
Seth Duvall.
Yeah, I trained Seth when he was going through his combine process. He was a tight end slash receiver, you know, and I was training tight end.
Last year, a couple of years ago?
He was drafted last year, so okay. This was going into last year's combine. And, you know, I trained him and a couple of other receivers and tight ends. And, you know, I obviously had a chance to meet his wife. And, you know, so I know that whole connection there. But Seth is a cool dude, you know. He's from Connecticut, went to Princeton. And I was proud of him to see him actually take a stance on something like that. I know he said that he's going to have kids that won't look exactly like him, mm-hmm. you know, and I think this is something that's big to him, you know. And so, yeah, I'm happy to see it. And I think the more we have players, you know, take stances on things like this and also get out into the community, because it's not just taking a knee, you know, getting out into the community and actually helping out, the better things will be.
Kind of fascinating how what was Colin Kaepernick's radical move last year it's picked up steam this year. You have to admit it has picked up steam. It's fascinating to me how people are beginning to accept it. The Bills, Sean McDermott, the other day talked about how they respect it. They've had team discussions about honoring the anthem and what do you do during the anthem, and it's just kind of fascinating to see how this is evolving around the National Football League.
You know, it's definitely fascinating how it's evolving around the Football League, and you start to see it across every team, and I think you're going to see it more and more every, you know, NFL teams, college teams, Little League, high school. You're going to see it a lot, but the even more fascinating thing is the fact that Kaepernick still doesn't have a job. You know, and it's like,
right, you're right.
There's still
everything but that.
Right, everything but that, you know. And so I know his message is resonating. And even the fact that he doesn't have a job is a message in itself.
We can talk about whatever you'd like. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter. Let's revisit our Twitter poll, because it got us started today, and I know there were some people with things to say about this, and it's really the state of NFL preseason. The Bills approach the third preseason game coming up this Saturday night, 7 o'clock, against the Baltimore Ravens. We expect we'll see a lot of the starters in this game, as you probably will all over the National Football League. But with the injury to Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall banged up last night, with the threat of injury to starters and important players in every preseason game, trying to settle on what you think is the right number of NFL preseason games and how should they be played. What's the sweet spot for NFL preseason game? Our Twitter poll so far, more than half of you think two is the right number. 54% of you say two preseason games is enough. 22% of you say three. 14% say no preseason games. 11% of you say keep it at four. We can revisit that discussion, 803-0550, the number to call, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. I mentioned my plan for two bona fide preseason games and a rookie game, and somehow Donald has managed to agree with me on that.
You know, I do like yours.
Thank you.
I'll go to this with – I like yours. I like two, if you went with two, but I like – and I keep saying I like these inter-squad scrimmages. So you have 2 weeks of training camp practice with your team, and then you get into a game week, and you'll have two preseason games. Those 2 weeks, you'll scrimmage the teams that you're going to play in the games, you know. So in the scrimmage, you get to see a full week of you going against another guy. So when we talk about evaluating players and evaluating young players against another team, now you get a full week to evaluate these guys in practice against guys from the opposing team, and then you get to play them in the game, you know. So I think you can go with either your plan or even 2 weeks and make sure that you have two inter-squad scrimmages, and you'll still have 4 weeks of total training camp.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are decisions to make, and Sean McDermott's got a couple of position battles that he's keeping an eye on his roster. When the coach met with the media before practice today, Sean McDermott, you know, well aware of he's got a couple of positions that they're still trying to sort through some of the traffic there. And Coach McDermott was asked today, when does he want to have these position battles settled? Here's what he had to say.
You'd like to have it, you know, this week as we move into this week and have some things, have some thoughts in mind, right, of how this thing's going to shape up. And we do have those thoughts. That said, there still is some competition going on at all levels of the roster and at all positions. So that'll be interesting this week as we go and watch the tackle position, as we go and watch other positions, Chris, with the competition that's going on and then how it affects special teams and then how special teams affects line of scrimmage value on the offensive side and the defensive side. We'll know a little bit more as we go through this week, as we prepare, and then after the Ravens game, how, you know, really how it's shaping up in all the positions.
Sean McDermott. So maybe, you know, I think you can almost take your cues from the Saturday's game as to, you know, who's going to be the right tackle, et cetera.
Yeah, and Murph, I have a favor to ask of you.
Okay.
You guys have a production meeting when, Friday?
Yes.
I need you to ask Coach McDermott, going into not this game, because we know what this game means to the team and guys making this roster, the last preseason game, how many guys actually make a team from the last preseason game?
Can I wait till next week to ask that?
You can wait till next week. You know, how many guys actually make a team in the last preseason game? Because you know which guys you want to be on your team and who's going to play what position. How many guys actually go off in the last preseason game and you're like, oh, we need to keep them?
I bet it's happened.
I'm sure it's happened, but it's probably rare.
It's rare, yeah. A couple of phone calls. Let's get to those. Jeff calling from Elma. Jeff, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph. Real quick, I mean, as far as your Twitter poll goes, yeah, I'd say two games is enough. I mean, you know, two games, the inner scrimmages, you know, keep these guys healthy for the regular season. But just if I could just make a point, Murph, I've been a fan, 52 years old, I've been a fan, seen it all, the 2-14s, the 4-12s, the Super Bowls, so on and so forth. My point being, I've never seen lots of transition, but I've never seen this late in the season trades and sort of like remolding your roster, if you will. And I understand new coaching, new general manager, just at this point in the season, a couple weeks before the regular season, 3 weeks actually, you know, you get the trades and so on and so forth. How do you feel, and do you remember a season or an upcoming training camp season that's had so much, say, variance in their trades and the starting lineups? And it just seems like they don't look – I'm sorry, but I'm not buying in. They don't look competitive.
Hmm. Well, there's a lot there. Let me try to unpack that for you, Jeff. As far as roster change, I think you're onto something, and – you know, Marv Levy, 25 years ago, used to say you go to training camp with your team. That's not the case anymore, I don't think, anywhere in the league. And I have noticed in recent years, even Brandon Bean's predecessor, Doug Whaley, was always in a state of roster churn, even deep into the season. This year, these last few weeks, quite frankly, it's been not at the bottom of the roster, but a couple of big trades and a couple of other acquisitions and movement by the team. I think part of it might be due to the fact that you have a general manager who – you know, got started a little bit later. You know, he got started after the draft, so he couldn't put his imprint on the draft. But now, as far as your point about being competitive, you don't see him being competitive. I would disagree with that. I think the Bills are going to be competitive. And I'm looking for this Saturday's game is, you know, I'm not ready to announce how many wins I think they'll get. We'll get to that point before the regular season. But this Saturday, I think we'll get a much greater sense of what we're dealing with here, what kind of team the Bills are, and how competitive they might be.
If I could just one more. Sure, thank you. As far as the deals that have been made and so on and so forth and getting rid of Watkins, I understand he was on a rookie contract and we didn't sign his option. What salary cap implications? I mean, I would imagine the Bills are going to be in pretty good salary cap position next year and the year after with the young team and the rookie roster. Younger player roster.
Sure. I think that's part of what drives it, I think.
I don't mean to say they're going to tank it, but I just don't, you know, I see 7-9 coming again. Okay, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, you might be right, 7-9. Again, I'm not going to name a record yet. But, yeah, that's part of what drives us, you know, and McDermott and Bean have said, you know, the trick is to get good players on their rookie deals when that's they're affordable.
That's the trick. I mean, and that's what most teams that win consistently, that's what they're trying to do, is get good players on their rookie deals. They're not out there making the splash signings. And quite frankly, you know, they don't want to pay most of the guys. You want to keep your yeah. core nucleus of guys, but you don't want to get outside, you know, that you don't want to get outside your box of where you think a certain position should be paid. And you don't want to overpay for a certain player or right. for a certain position, you right. know. And so sometimes you got to let guys go. I don't know if I think in today's football, and even you might see a lot more this year because they've changed the rules now where you have this big roster cut down on the last day, you know. So you're going to see teams pick up guys the next day after that, picking up guys off of waivers so that they can go into the season with those guys. I mean, it's just totally different now, yeah. you know, in terms during camp. Teams are making trades. They're doing different things to try to make their roster better. And I don't know if I necessarily – at the top of the roster is hard to do, but at the bottom of the roster, you do what you got to do. Yeah. If you feel like you're not good enough, you don't have enough depth, well, keep on making those moves.
A call here from Demetrius on Grand Island. Hello, Demetrius. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys, man. Good to talk to you. Real quick, I just wanted to touch on two key points. I see what McDermott and the staff is trying to do. They're trying to build a team. And when you look at the things that Taylor has done, now his play has to rise up. But he has taken one for the team, so to speak. And you're bringing in guys that have a personality of more of a instead of being an introvert, I took Watkins to being an introvert sometimes. So you got more people that's more outgoing, so therefore you're going to have more of a family atmosphere. And then my final point on Kaepernick, you know, I don't know if I heard it wrong or right, but didn't he turn down a contract when they were going to give him an extension? And if he did, then I think that, you know, everything else fires from the political standpoint is good. I'm with you. But, man, you turned down a contract. You got guys that are fighting being yeah. in the NFL, and you had a platform, you turned it down.
Did he turn down a contract offer, Kaepernick, from the Niners? I don't think so, Donald.
I feel like wrong. I've heard that in the past.
Really?
I feel like I've heard that. Yeah, he turned down something with his contract, or he opted out of his contract. I've heard something like
know.
That, yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't want to dwell on Kaepernick here. I'm not sure that he can play and help a team that much at quarterback, but that's beside the point. I don't necessarily agree with his stance, but I do believe he has a right to express himself in a nonviolent, non-threatening way, which is what he's done. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, it's America. You can yeah. you truly can do what you want, and people are going to agree. People aren't going to agree. It's just yeah. the country that we live in. I do feel like, though, he turned down an option.
Did he?
Yeah.
Maybe we can look into that. Tyrod Taylor spoke with the media today, coming off the field after practice. First time that media has had a chance to talk to Bills players since the Anquan Boldin retirement announcement coming up on Sunday night. Here's what Bills quarterback Tyrod Taylor had to say about Anquan Boldin and other matters today.
Definitely, I'm unfortunate that we lost Anquan, but as a man, as a player, you got to respect his decision. He had a personal reason, so I mean, still a good friend of mine. I haven't got a chance to talk to him about it, but just got to continue to keep moving on. This league, like I said before, you can't predict the things that happen. But as a team and personally, just got to be able to adjust and continue to keep your mind focused on the goal. Everything is still obtainable, and just got to continue to keep chipping away one day at a time.
How frustrating is that when, you know, receivers keep coming in and out? I mean, you know, Sammy goes, Anquan's gone, you know, Jordan's hurt, things like that.
I mean, of course, it's not the best scenario, but like I said, we got guys on our team right now. We have a team full of playmakers still. Those guys just would have added to what we have. But just got to continue to keep, like I said, chipping away one day at a time and keeping our mindset. Everything that we have is still in front of us. All our goals are still, we can still reach that. So we just got to continue to do what we've been doing over the past couple weeks and keep our head forward.
Tyrod, you spoke with Anquan before he signed. I mean, he seemed
pretty... I never admitted to that. I smiled when y'all asked me that.
Okay, well, you have remember. A good relationship. Did it appear that he was all in at that point in time?
Yes. And I don't think he would have made that decision. Like I said, over the past couple of days, maybe something's been weighing on him. Like I said, he made a statement on the reasons why he did. And like I said, as a man, I just got to respect his decision. I appreciate the things that he taught me throughout his short time here, the things that he taught Zay, a young guy that could definitely benefit from that relationship. Hopefully they're able to keep in touch, even from him being on the outside looking in. But as a team, we got to continue to move forward and control the things that we can.
Sean was saying this is a big opportunity for someone on the roster to step up. Is there anyone in your eyes that you've seen really make a stride?
It's been, a day since the news has broke. But I would say in that receiver room, guys have been competing since day one. And I like the mindset that those guys have. It's all friendly competition, but they're pushing each other to be their best each and every day. And that's what this team is built upon.
How much tougher has your job gotten without Sammy, without Anquan? Because you're the guy that needs to get these guys the ball. How much tougher is it without their experience?
Just got to spend more time with the guys that we have here. We've been building a bond and building chemistry the whole time. But now, as the receiver room gets a little shorter in depth, I just got to spend more time with those guys. And that's what I've been doing, talking to them daily. On the field and off the field.
Is people saying you're being set up to fail? How do you respond to
that? I can't control some of the things that go on in this league. All I could do is focus on myself and me preparing each and every week. And that's what my mindset has been since the day I've been fortunate enough to play in this league. There's been a lot of things that I've had to adjust to, and I'm going to continue to keep doing and keep my mind focused, like I said, on my goals and the goals that we have as a team.
Tyrod, how do you maintain focus in that receiver? I mean, with your young group of receivers, knowing that they've gone through a little bit of, there's been some change, the moving parts over the past 2 weeks.
For sure. It's a challenge for all of us. It's definitely a challenge for them, too. And we'll see as the time goes on how they respond to that challenge. I'm looking forward to seeing them respond in a great way. And I think that they have their mindset as well to do the same.
Specifically, Zay Jones, how important is this preseason for him?
Definitely an important game. Every time he gets a chance to go out there and create plays and make plays, it's definitely important for him. A young guy in this league, getting confidence early on in the preseason is definitely big. Like I told him yesterday, he's kind of like a rookie and a vet, like in the same year. A lot of spin thrown at him. He's taking it in stride, challenging himself to be better each and every day.
Would it ever be appropriate, I guess, of you to feel like you could go to management and say, hey, got young guys here, maybe I might need a little more veteran, maybe I might need a guy maybe to stretch the field more? Would that ever be something you would want to do or feel appropriate doing?
Me and Coach McDermott have a very good relationship. The communication has been open. But at the same time, they make the decisions. It's my job to focus on preparing each and every day. And like I said, I'm always going to just control the things that I control and continue to keep a positive mindset and continue to keep working hard.
Do you think this might even be going to give you an opportunity to prove yourself even more so, doing it with less receiving help? Like, I'm a franchise quarterback. Throw me four guys, and I'll prove myself.
Regardless of the circumstances, you have to go out there and make things work. And that's our job as an offense, to go out there and execute whoever's on the field. Guys go down, get hurt in this league. You got to be able to continue to stay focused as a team. And like I said, my mindset is right now get everyone on the same page. That way we can go out there and play at a high level and win games and chase the goals that we've set as a team.
Your coach said that your left tackle is probably – he's on schedule to be there week one. How nice is that? And comforting is it to you that Cordy might be there with you?
It's definitely exciting. We've seen him go through a long offseason battling injuries and trying to get back. We know how bad he wants to be on the field. He's working hard each and every day, just trying to get back out there. And it's definitely a good thing once he's out there. But the guys that have been playing in there in his position right now have been competing their butts off. And look forward to him to continue to keep doing that.
The same with Jordan Matthews, obviously, with all the change. Finally getting him, maybe get back in, play with you guys is going to be a good job as well.
Absolutely. Just over the years, Jordan Matthews has played very well for the Eagles. We know what type of production he can bring to the table. Just got to get him healthy. That's the main thing, is that he gets healthy and gets back out there so we can get on the same page. We've been talking through a lot of things. We've been able to run some routes recently. But the main thing is to get him back there so he can be on the field and with live bullets and going out there and executing our offense.
Coach McDermott talked about establishing a leadership council. Is that something that you see yourself possibly being a part of?
Yes. He's actually already established a group, and I'm pretty sure with changes to the team, things will get moved around. But I've been a part of those meetings, and I think it's good for the players to have a open conversation with our head coach and just to talk about things that are going on in the locker room, things that are going on in the league. It just get the player's viewpoint across to the coach. And he's been very good about just listening to us and giving us open ear.
Tyrod Taylor, Bills quarterback, meeting with the media just a little bit ago here after practice in rainy Orchard Park, New York. Hey, Donald, Jordan Matthews, when he was on the show a half hour ago, I got the sense that he kind of discounted, you know, how much chemistry means working with a quarterback. I've heard you talk about how important it is. What are we to believe here? So Tyrod, and again, there's nothing that can be done about it now because the regular season opener is coming, you know, a little bit less than 3 weeks away. But should we worry about that, the fact that Tyrod is, you know, working with the new group of receivers that were not here last year for the most part, and he's not able to throw in you know, practice settings yet or preseason yet with Jordan Matthews? How much concern would you have about that at this
point?
I'm
concerned.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm concerned because, you know, timing is everything. Now, I know the style of play that Tyrod, how he likes to play the game, and I know he likes to break contain. But even in breaking contain, Jordan has to understand where he wants, you know, where Tyrod wants him to be. You know, look, if I break contain, I need you to go deep so I can throw it up to you, or I need you to come back to me. I mean, these are different things, and you can talk about it in the meeting rooms all you want to. But until you do it out there on the field, you know, it's tough to do. Now, I know Jordan, he's probably going to practice before week one, but it's not enough time to really get ready for game weeks. And Brownie talked about this on the show yesterday. You truly need that time. You truly need that relationship with the quarterback as a receiver so that the quarterback knows that you're going to be open. He does not know that Jordan Matthews is going to be open. He knows that he's been productive. He's probably even watched film of Jordan Matthews with the Eagles, if he's smart enough. And Tyrod, we know he likes to work hard. You know, he comes in the building early, he leaves late. I'm sure he's watched film of Jordan Matthews playing down in Philly, but at the end of the day, he doesn't know that he's going to be open on every route. And he doesn't know which routes he's better at because some receivers are better at certain routes than others. You know, they just know how to get open on hitches and comebacks, or some of them know how to get open on an incoming route, like a dig or something like that. Tyrod doesn't know any of that stuff. So there's a lot that they got to get down packed, and they just don't have the time to do it.
All right. Hey, Zay Jones is going to be an important part of the receiver group as well, the rookie Buffalo second-round draft pick Zay Jones. He talked to the media after practice today, and Zay Jones was asked about his reaction to Anquan Boldin's retirement announcement on Sunday.
I think it caught a lot of us at surprise. But, you know, it's just another event that happened, and wish him the best moving forward. You know, he's going off to do some great things in the world. That's what he said, so I support him fully. Really excited for his future.
Tyrod said you're like a rookie and a vet with all the stuff that's been thrown at you this offseason. How well do you feel you've handled some, you know, a lot of question marks, a lot of things you might not have expected?
No, I didn't expect any of this, but, you know, that's life and that's football. A lot thrown at this team, not just me, so a lot of growing up to do. Just got to mature fast and do the best that we can moving forward.
Did you still learn things from Anquan despite him only being here for 2 weeks?
Oh, yeah, totally. Anquan's a veteran receiver, 15 years, Hall of Fame player. So just the knowledge that he's given me is crucial. Moving forward, I'll always hold it with me and cherish the moments that we had. I'm really happy to see him move on, though, and do better things in the world. He seems like he's really happy.
Are you going to try to make an effort to stay in touch with him now that, you know, he's no longer?
Of course. I try to stay in touch with all the receivers that I've came in contact. Sammy, Anquan, consider these guys my friends, people that have helped me take the next step in the NFL. So, most definitely.
Say, how much are you looking at this as an opportunity to push yourself ahead in that room and maybe not only production-wise but as a leader, you know, assume a new role?
I think each day presents its own opportunity. Like today, it was a great day for us. Great practice. Got some great scouting in for Baltimore. So, I mean, each day is another opportunity, so I'm just going to treat it the same.
What do you need to do in this third week of the preseason to kind of pull away from
that? I just continue to do my job, really. And we're all building each other up. I think everyone's doing a phenomenal job. Des Lewis did really well today in practice. Andre Holmes, it's great to see J-Matt back out there looking healthier. So, I mean, everyone's doing a great job, and I'm really proud of them.
Relationship and chemistry developed over, you know, the past couple weeks with Tyrod Taylor?
I think it's growing. It's getting there. You know, it's just going to be a day-to-day process, really. These games are helping tremendously. I'm playing more and more as the preseason goes. So hopefully just getting more reps and more timing down under my belt is going to help us for the regular season.
Zay Jones, rookie wide receiver. Chemistry is going to be a big issue, right? And it's fine. It is. It's going to be a big issue with receivers and the quarterback. And chemistry, it's not all on the receivers either.
It's not. It's on the quarterback as well. The chemistry is huge, especially for a rookie receiver. It's big for Tyrod and Jordan Matthews, but a rookie receiver who's going to be in, he's going to be the number two receiver probably, number one or number two receiver on this team. So, yeah, he has to have the chemistry down with Tyrod Taylor. And that whole, you know, he's like a veteran and a rookie all in 1 year. That's the truth. But I'm sure, see, the thing that Zay Jones has going for him is his dad, you know, and his brother and their whole football family. His dad played, 12 years or something like that in the league. He's won a few Super Bowls. So his dad can actually say, listen, these things happen. These things happen. You got to be able to adjust. They might throw you in there, but guess what? You got to be able to just be ready. Be ready. And a lot of guys don't have that coming into this league. I didn't have that. I didn't. When I was thrown out there, it was like, just go out there and make plays. I don't know what else to tell you. My father didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, his dad has played in the league. And Zay seems like, when you watch him last week in the game, he's impressive.
Yeah, he impressed me. We're going to break. We're going to hear from one of the other receivers who figures to play a prominent role, Andre Holmes. He talked to the media today after practice. Plus, fake news, real news, all of that coming up in our next segment. Come on back for that. Plus, we'll take your phone calls, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Donald and I back with the final half hour of the show. You are welcome to join us. What's your plan for fixing preseason? Maybe it doesn't need to be fixed. You know, we complain about it. I'm okay. I can live with the way it is. Yeah. The one thing that got my attention a couple of years ago, this is going back to our discussion at the top of the show, what's the right number of preseason games? You can weigh in on that at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A couple of years ago, maybe it was at one of the Super Bowl news conferences, the commissioner, the great Roger Goodell, said that, look, he acknowledged, he said, look, we know that preseason is a disservice to our game. That he basically admitted it kind of tarnished the NFL product.
Yeah,
so I do think it needs to be fixed.
I think, to be honest, they can just take the fourth one out. Yeah. That's why I said to you to pose that question to Coach McDermott, because nobody's making a team. Now, I mean, I'm sure people do, but look, you have a full spring, and then you have 2 weeks in training camp, and then you have three. Right now you have four, but if you take it down to three preseason games, that should be enough time for you to evaluate these guys if they're good enough or not to make your roster.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you can take that fourth game out. How much money would you lose in the fourth game? It's going to be millions, but come on. In the big picture of things, like, nobody wants to watch that game.
No. Anyway, what's the right number of preseason games? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or do it via Twitter. Vote in our Twitter poll on this topic. Joe's on the line with another topic. Hi, Joe. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hello, guys. How you doing? I just have one question. Actually, I've been watching the show for a long time, but I was just thinking, it wouldn't be just easier because of all the change-ups and all the stuff that's going on with the new team, the new owner, the new scouting and all that crap. I know it's kind of late because it's already the second preseason going into third. Wouldn't it be easier just to have the guys that are going to supposedly be there, or at least try to get the people, like the receiver and the quarterback, to, you know, take time off, you know, like, just besides the practice that you guys have, you know, like take some days off during the week and meet up and spend a few hours that way to get chemistry with the team that way? Would it be the best way to do that?
You mean instead of practicing, just hang?
No. What I'm saying is, you know, even when they have practices, you even take days off on their own selves to say, hey, let's go hang out in this park and throw a few balls and do a couple routes. You know, get back on the timing situation, even though you're limited in your practices, but you're hanging around all the time. So I would hope just to, you know, go out in the field and just make sure
Private workouts, throw-in sessions, they do that, Donald, in the offseason?
Yeah, they do that in the offseason. Once the season starts back up, it's on and popping. You know, they're not going to – they're off days. Players off days, they're going to take off. They're not going to just stay around here. And I mean, you give a player an off day, they're going to take off. That's just, even if they don't fly somewhere else, which we know a lot of players do, a la the New York Giants that you made a point of earlier, they will take off. I think
for me, they just need to take away that fourth and final preseason game. Our man Joe, get him some tissues or something like that.
John is on the line with an idea about preseason. John, go ahead.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good.
I know that guy sitting next to you, he's just a kid. I'm much older than you are. But do you remember back in the AFL days when they had six preseason
games? I do.
Games?
Yeah, I sure do. That was too many back then.
It was way before me.
By the time they started the season, most of the players were all beat up.
Yeah. Yeah, I do recall that. I don't know why they did that, but they had, like 100 players in camp. I don't think there were any limits on the number of players they could have at camp, right?
When was this, AFL days?
Well, even after that, like 70s,
yeah.
I think they had six preseason games.
Actually, the one I can remember as a kid, the one year Jack Kemp broke his leg and he couldn't play the season. He broke it in the preseason game.
Yeah, you're not advocating going back to that, are you, John?
I think they should only have two.
Yeah, me too.
Is this something that has come up in the owners' meetings?
No.
No?
The only time I ever heard anybody in any authority position mention it was Roger Goodell admitting, look, we know preseason is not showcasing our product in a positive light, which is pretty amazing, So
yeah,
do something
for the commissioner
about it.
To say
commissioner,
that, yeah.
Fix it.
Fix it. Do something, because I understand the need for preseason games, but I also see the flip side of this thing. And I know as a player, it takes me as a player 1 to 2 games just to get the feeling of being in the game again. I can get into certain situations, have to make those plays. But even with 4 preseason games, you're still not ready for the regular season. I mean, it still takes a few games before a team gets rolling, Mm-hmm. So why don't you just cut down on the preseason games? The regular season begins, and now everything counts, instead of having these preseason games where you have that risk of injury.
Bills getting set for their 3rd of 4 preseason games this Saturday night. Of course, today, back at practice today, after having yesterday off, the focus of attention in the locker room today when the media was in there was on Sunday's surprise announcement by wide receiver Anquan Boldin that he is retiring, stepping away from the Bills in the NFL. And one of his fellow receivers on the Bills roster, Andre Holmes, was asked about that. Here's what Andre Holmes had to say in the Bills locker room today about Bolden's retirement announcement.
He went out the way that, a lot of players don't get to go out, and that's on his own terms. He's played about 15, 16 years, and he's done a lot for the league, and he's doing a lot for his community and everything. So, everyone here respects his decision and hopes the best, for him.
Did you ever get the sense that maybe he wasn't all in when he got here?
Not at all. He was the first one on the field every day, warming up. Off days we at times would get some extra work in, and he didn't show that he was about to retire or didn't care about being here or anything.
Andre, the words opportunity and others stepping up have been thrown around since his retirement. How do you guys as a whole in the room take and grab these opportunities to step up?
Well, I mean, we spent almost the whole offseason with the same amount of guys, minus Sammy, but we brought in Jordan. So everybody knows, what's at stake and what opportunities there. And we're all hard workers, and we all come in every day wanting to, get the best out of the day and make yourself better. So it's not going to change the receiver room at all as far as how hard we're going to work and our dedication to getting better.
Andre, even though his time was brief here, Anquan is an incredibly talented and a veteran here. Even though you only got to spend a couple days with him, do you feel as though that you learned a lot from him and it was beneficial?
Definitely. We got to see in the meeting rooms just how intelligent he was as far as football goes. I mean, playing that long, you've been in numerous offenses, seeing so many different defenses and seen him repetitively, so he taught us a lot as far as what to look for and what to do as far as certain routes and getting open. So we're definitely going to take a lot from what those 2 weeks that he was here, what he taught us.
Andre Holmes, Bills receiver, speaking in the locker room earlier today. One thing's clear, Donald, the short time that he was here, and maybe because of his reputation, Anquan Boldin left an impression, it seems, based on these comments, it left an impression on his Buffalo teammates.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like anybody is upset with what he did. Everyone kind of respects his, at least on the surface, they respect, you know, his decision to go ahead and walk away from this thing. And to be honest with you, I mean, I don't know if he obviously wasn't all in, right? So I'd rather a guy leave than to be here and not be all in, you know, and I think those guys respect his decision. And when you have a young team, we essentially do have a young team, they look up to a guy like Anquan Boldin and they respect what he's done.
Time now for Fake News, Real News, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Donald and I and our producer, Jay Harris, comb through the NFL news to see which is baloney and which is real. Fake News, Real News. Item number one, plays perfect. Actually, this may have been the this may have been what inspired us to talk about this topic today, preseason. The NFL will shorten preseason, fake or real. The Washington Post, Mark Maskey, the longtime writer of the Washington Post, says the NFL is talking about shortening the preseason again. Roger Goodell, at a meeting with season ticket holders, Giant season ticket holders, a fan forum, said, when I go around to fans, that's the number one thing I hear. They think the NFL should do things to the highest possible standards. Preseason games are not that. The commissioner said a preseason of 2 to 3 games would be sufficient. He says there is value to preseason games, building teams, evaluating players, but other ways of doing that. NFL will shorten preseason, fake or real. I say it's real. Not going to happen this year, obviously, but I think with the commissioner on board, talking about 2 or 3 games, with the commissioner going to get his lucrative contract extension any day now, he's going to make it happen. I think you're looking at a shorter preseason maybe as soon as next year.
Lucrative, huh? $212 million? Sheesh. No, I think it's real as well. I think that he, because you have him on board, this is something that's going to come up soon in these owners' meetings in the next year or two, something like that. And I think ultimately the players will be happy with that. I think that the owners and the coaches will be happy with that. It's time to get into the – after you get 2 or 3 games in, man, it's time to get into the regular season.
Yeah, so I think it'll happen.
I think it's going to happen. I think I don't think that the owners and I don't think that the commissioner – wants to have a bad product out there on the field. And we know what at least the last preseason game is. It's not a product that people really, really want to see.
Yep, I agree. Item number two, fake or real. The Carolina Panthers will go from worst to first. ESPN's Vince Verhel did a report on this. Who's going to go worst to first? He had the Carolina Panthers number one on his list of teams to go worst, potentially going worst to first. Carolina won 6 games last year. They had injuries. They've had upheaval now with a new general manager. I can see Carolina going from worst to first. And as you look around the landscape, who else might be able to pull that off? I have one other candidate, San Diego Chargers, worst in the AFC West last year. I think, you know, Carolina Panthers will go from worst to first. I'll say that's real and that it could happen, but I also think the San Diego Chargers could make a jump up in the AFC West this year.
I'm going to go fake on this.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to go fake. I know they're excited about Christian McCaffrey and this team coming back, but ultimately I think they lost their defensive coordinator. I think that's going to be big for them, not having that signal caller who was obviously here in Buffalo now. And I think, you know, they lost guys like Tolbert. The loss of some of the guys on their roster is huge. And then ultimately, I just think that you have the Falcons in that division, and it's, you know, they're back. And then you have the Tampa Bay Bucks. And I think the Bucks are a good team, a good young team, and I think they're going to make a run for it as well.
Have you been watching any Hard Knocks?
I watched the first episode of Hard Knocks, and then I got into this Mayweather and McGregor all-access stuff. I'm going to get back to Hard Knocks, though.
I've watched a little bit. It might have been the second episode where they cut Aguayo. Was that
episode two? Oh, yeah. I think that's episode two. Yeah.
I watched a little bit of that over the weekend. It's okay.
Yeah. You know, it's okay. Would you be okay with Hard Knocks being here?
No.
No?
Not really.
That'd be a lot.
I think there's a lot.
It's like cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And then guys are, you know, that would be a lot because certain guys are trying to be the Hard Knocks star and all of that stuff.
Right.
It's just like, come on, let's just play football.
Yeah. I don't wonder if that's affecting Tampa Bay. We'll find out, right, when the Bills see him in the regular season.
We will.
We're going to break. Going to come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? It is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Good show today. We had Steve Tasker in studio with us, the Bills' former special teamer, the Wall of Famer, now from the NFL on CBS. And Steve weighed in on what he would change about NFL preseason.
Yeah, I think two is the way to go, and I think you need to have an 18-game regular season. I told you this. My plan is, mine is to go two regular season. And I like your idea about having a rookie game. One of those two preseason games could be a rookie game. It's a great idea. If you're in less one or first or second year, or maybe in your third training camp, you're allowed to play in that rookie game and go with it. And then have one game where the veterans, probably the first game is where the veterans are going to come in and jump back into it and play, you know, a lion's share of the first game.
Yeah.
And then have the rookies play in that second game. It'll give them a chance to evaluate and get a look at them, and then give them another week to make cuts, and then jump off to an 18-game schedule.
The Tasker plan for fixing preseason. I'm sure we haven't heard the last of any of this. Jordan Matthews joined us. Really was the highlight of the week so far.
He was.
Great wide receiver, great talker, really, the wide receiver for the Bills. And he talked about the challenge for he and Tyrod Taylor trying to build chemistry between the quarterback and the wide receiver in the next couple of weeks before the regular season.
You know, it's huge. I think it's one of those things that sometimes is overhyped a little bit. You know, I think sometimes people have this assumption that quarterbacks and receivers are basically living together and throwing every single day. That's not the case. But when you're in the building, having a great relationship with that guy is huge, because there's plays on the field where we break the huddle. In my mind, I'm thinking the same thing as him. And we got to be on that same page. I got this corner on me. The ball has to go here. It has to come here now. And he's already thinking, I see this corner on Jordan. It's a mismatch. It's a mixed match. I can go exploit that. I'm giving it to my guy.
He talked about, Jordan said, he developing that chemistry with Carson Wentz. Now that's all out the window. He's got to
start over. Hopefully Tyrod gets him a puppy.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our Entercom board op today, Brayton Wilson. Production assistants from George Blass, Jeff Koltenek, Thomas Hollander, Jay Harris, Ryan Dukarm, Jess Pappas, all of them contributing in the show. The show returns tomorrow at 12 noon. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.